using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Friday, the 16th of April, year of our Lord, 2021. It is day 398 of America held hostage, 15 days for lockdown. How's this for a corporatocracy? The CEO of Pfizer is now dictating that we will get his jab annually. Well, that was pretty predictable. We knew this. They've been angling for this for years with the flu. We'll have as our guest today Ammon Bundy, peoplesrights.org. And we're going to take a look at the back and forth between Jim Jordan, Steve Scalise, and Fauci. What really happened and what didn't happen? We'll be right back. As we see some surprising awareness with a Washington Post reporter finally paying attention after years of overlooking all of this, to Fauci's gain-of-function experiments. I've been reporting on this since 2014. And actually, the person who did the most work on this was a reporter for USA Today. And yet, the rest of mainstream media pretty much ignored this, even when the Congress put a moratorium on this for a couple of years. They ignored it even when Fauci and Francis Collins ignored that moratorium from the Congress and continued with their work. When they released their data from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and then at that point in time, they didn't even realize that they were funding this gain-of-function research in China. You had scientists who worked in the field who were livid about this. They said nothing good can come of this. It could be released deliberately. Why do you think our government is doing it? It is to release it deliberately. It is a bioweapon, and it's not a bioweapon for the for our enemies, the Russians or the Chinese. You are their enemy. Come on, we know that by now, don't we? They've been engaged in economic sanctions with us for the last year. They keep writing reports saying we are the enemy. They've done more to destroy the middle class of America than they have Al-Qaeda, because Al-Qaeda is their partner. But, you know, when they continued to do that, the press didn't care, the Congress didn't care, that Fauci had absolute contempt. And so we're going to show the contempt of Fauci in this back and forth with Jim Jordan, Steve Scalise that happened yesterday. But I want to begin with where the NIH is continuing to go. It's not just gain of function. And remember, gain of function is to bring in a deadly pathogen, bacterial, viral, to give it a gain of function, to make it more deadly, to make it more easily spread. And the first one that got my attention, and I've talked about it several times, was bringing in a very, very rare bacteria that only existed two places on Earth. Once you contract this, and it gets a little bit of a start, it has a 45% fatality rate. They thought they could do better. So they brought it to Tulane, with the people that were behind the Tuskegee Institute type of things and the Institute, the National Primate Institute there. And it escaped from a biosafety level 3 lab. And that got a lot of people's attention. You had, as the CDC investigated, you had one of the workers come down with it. They said, oh, nothing to see here. She researches this kind of stuff all the time. I'm sure she contracted it somewhere else. These people are coincidence theorists. But the USA Today reporter, who had been following this for a very long time, said, look, let's take a look at the long history of accidents these people have had. Faulty equipment, infected mice and other animals that escaped, just like these monkeys escaped. And maybe we should do something about this. And so Congress stopped it, but Fauci and Collins went ahead. Nothing ever happened to them, just like nothing ever happened to James Clapper when he lied to the Senate and to all of America under oath, committed perjury. Nothing ever happened to him. Oh, we're not looking at people. And then we found in about a month or so, the information was released. And so when we look at what they're doing now, they're going beyond that. Thursday, the head release, and NPR was very proud to report that scientists have created early embryos that are part human and part monkey using fluorescent antibody-based stains and advanced microscopy. Researchers are able to visualize cells of different species in an early stage of chimeric embryo. Chimeric means that you've taken two completely different things. I mean, we're not just talking about species, because their definition of species is not really different kinds necessarily. They've talked about how different, I think they're finches in the Grand Canyon, as they get geographically separated from each other, their song changes slightly. So that, and that's an integral part of their mating ritual. And so if the song isn't exactly right, then the mating doesn't happen. And by their definition, if two animals, no matter how similar they are, if they don't mate, they're not the same species. But they didn't really change. In all other regards, they're exactly the same animal. We're talking about combining humans with monkeys. And they've been doing this in terms of trying to combine human cells with pigs and other animals. So they decide they would do it with monkeys because they're more like humans than sheep and pigs. The embryos, described Thursday in the Journal of Cell, were created in part to try to find new ways to produce organs for people who need transplants. The ethicist who works at Rice University's Baker Institute, actually she's not an ethicist, she's just a fellow for science and technology. She's asking some ethical questions that we don't seem to ask anymore. We have these people who engage in scientism as a religion, and guess what? Scientism doesn't have any science in it. It also doesn't have any ethics as a religion. And so she said, my first question is, why would you do this? I think the public is going to be concerned, and I am as well, that we're just kind of pushing forward with science without having a proper conversation about what we should or should not do. Again, Jurassic Park. Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should. And just because you can come up with one possible good that might come out of this, when there's infinite negative outcomes that could come out of this, that's no reason to push forward with it. But more than anything else, you can't balance, the pragmatism is completely out of balance. But there's not an ethical case for this. This, again, goes back to cannibalism, which is what we're talking about. Creating organisms that are part human and part animal. And said after one day, they were able to detect human cells growing in 132 of the embryos and were able to study the embryos for up to 19 days after they combined some stem cell, injected human stem cells into the monkey embryos. Our goal is not to generate any new organism or any monster. That's not their goal. But that's what they'll do. And we're not doing anything like that. Oh, yeah. We're trying to understand how cells from different organisms communicate with one another. Well, why would you care? The biggest concern, they said, is that someone could try to take this work further and attempt to make a baby out of an embryo made this way. One of the scientists, a bioethicist, Hank Greeley at Stanford University, said, well, I don't think we're on the edge of Planet of the Apes. I think rogue scientists are few and far between, but the number is not zero. If they have the technology to do this, and this is the concern that I have, we have seen when everybody got very concerned about that Chinese scientist who bragged that he had done genetic modification of embryos. Why did everybody freak out? Even the Chinese communist government made him disappear. Well, because if you modify an embryo, not an adult, in other words, when they have genetic modifications to adults, they've been able to get animals that are colorblind to be able to see colors by genetic modification. But if you do that to an adult, it typically doesn't last permanently because they have so many other cells. The cells that are modified will die, and there is a something that causes it to go back and revert to its type as the reproduction cells are coming in. So you're constantly recreating different cells in your retina, and that's constantly being destroyed and replicated, one of the places in your body where that happens most frequently. And so that would disappear. However, if you do it to an embryo, that's called a seed modification. And any of those changes that you do to an embryo, that gets locked in for the lifetime of that organism. And not only that, it's passed on to future generations as well, good or bad, whatever you've done. And these people do not have godlike wisdom or perfect technology. And so those things right there ought to be one of the reasons why we stop doing this. But we also don't have scientists or governments that really have any ethical restraints on them. As I say all the time, the big problem that we have as normal people is that, first of all, we don't realize how evil these people are. Secondly, we don't realize how powerful the technology they have is and how unlimited the resources. One of the things that's happened with this, it's not just the unlimited amount of money that the federal government has, but it is the fact that we've actually reversed the Tower of Babel. We have unified everybody into a common language when it comes to science and technology. I think I told the story before. When I first went to Texas Instruments, I was with a part of a group that was going to be doing support. It was right out of college, so it's basically a support job. But I was there as the American, and they had somebody from England, somebody from Germany, somebody from France, somebody from Japan. We were all learning this stuff. And some of the people did not speak English. Some of them could read English, but not speak it. But they could all understand the computer language. And most of them, as I said, could read English, even if they couldn't. So what you have is a unification that's happened in the last few decades. Global communication, instantaneous, the sharing and the pyramiding of knowledge. Now, if you stop and think about it, the real Tower of Babel has been our ability to pyramid and to stockpile this information. And they're doing that a great deal, even though they're cutting out the information that you are allowed to hear. Even though they're hiding a great deal of stuff from you, and even though they are pushing heavily a program of censorship, they are creating a massive hive mind of being able to share and being able to do it instantly. And this is why nothing is held from them. Anything that they set their mind to, they can accomplish. And these are not people who are necessarily angels. Nobody is. And unfortunately, there's nobody governing these non-angels. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of pressure for everybody to go along with this. They said the National Institutes of Health has been weighing the idea of lifting a ban on funding this kind of research, but it's been waiting for new guidelines. Let me tell you, they don't care whether there's a ban on this. Just like the gain-of-function research that they did at Wuhan, at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and many other places, by the way. We only talk about those two. They did it at a lot of places. And they were defiant when they were called out on the fact that they were supposed to have stopped doing that. Now, according to a Washington Post columnist, Josh Rogan, he said, people don't want to think about the fact that our hero of the pandemic, Dr. Fauci, might also have been connected to this research, which might have also been connected to the outbreak. Washington Post columnist. Now they tell you, after over a year. The NIH has funded gain-of-function research by creating novel strains of viruses, but those strains can be highly transmissible and deadly. There is no but in all of this. That's exactly what they were designed to do. That's what gain-of-function means. Make it more transmissible. Make it more deadly. By definition, Fauci is the godfather, says Josh Rogan, the godfather of gain-of-function research as we know it.
Yeah, he's the godfather here. We got a surge. You're going to have to stay locked down until I tell you here.
Let me tell you, I truly do believe that they were involved in release and creating this thing, whether they released it intentionally or not. I don't have a problem believing that they released it intentionally. The good news is, it's not the dangerous thing that they said it was, but that's coming. The bad news is that the tyranny that they unleashed with this. This is like 9/11. You know, these people are perfectly capable of killing however many people they wish in terms of establishing their power. And all this stuff was tied at the very beginning to 9/11. The first simulation, and I have a listener saying, you know, you talk about Dark Winter and Event 201 and Cladex. He goes, there's at least four or five. Yeah, that's right. There's one every year between 2001 and 2019. A couple of years before all that was happening, what I believe was probably referring to the actual event, not even something Event 201, but to the actual lockdown that we had last year. There was the chatter about Dark Winter 2 going back to 2017-2018 timeframe. A lot of chatter about that. Rogan cautioned that he was not saying that Fauci did anything illegal. Well, I think he did. As a matter of fact, I know he did. There's absolutely no doubt that what Fauci did was illegal. He continued his research in contempt of Congress when they were told not to do it. That is illegal. It's as illegal as James Clapper testifying under oath. And it is as obvious as Clapper's perjury under oath. And what is also painfully obvious is that nobody in Congress will do a damn thing about it. The public, he said, should be more aware of this type of research. I've tried for 7 years. It was Allison Young at USA Today that ran those series. She did the most research on it. Did an excellent job. But I've talked about it continuously since then. The Wuhan Institute of Virology, only 10 miles from where the COVID was thought to have broken out. If you were an alien and you dropped down on Earth, said Josh Rogan, the Washington Post reporter, the simplest explanation for the virus's origin is a lab leak, he said. But see, we don't go with the simple explanations. If we have people who get a vaccine shot and they die later that day, or they pass out immediately, we're told not to jump to any conclusions. I'm sure there's some explanation. This is all just a coincidence. These people are coincidence theorists. And if you question the government's official narrative, you'll be dismissed as a conspiracy theorist. But they're coincidence theorists. He said, so we can't say anything like gain of function might be dangerous or that COVID might have come from a lab because we're going to lose our careers. We're going to lose our funding. That's what the scientists at the NIH say. That's what all the scientists are saying. But, you know, if you're an alien and you just drop down, the simplest thing would be to say, I think it happened here, especially if you understand what their obsession has been for the last 2 decades, that they've been planning for exactly what they did to us last year for 2 decades. Annual simulations, annual practices, annual training, psychological training for the people who would implement it, a legal basis for all the different states to do what they did, financially incentivizing it, planning to enact draconian legislation to rush vaccines through, telling all the people involved everybody died because you didn't have draconian lockdown and rush a vaccine. And, of course, they were practicing the entire time about how they would lie to people. The National Institute of Health has also awarded a $500,000 grant to General Electric to build a COVID-detecting microchip We are seeing this happening now constantly. We just had the DARPA project that was announced earlier this week. So they'll put a gel under your skin that'll constantly monitor you. Now, the NIH is also involved, just like DARPA, and both of them are developing biological weapons against us. This is a 2-year grant to GE, and this $500,000 is just the tip of the iceberg. They have funded up to $10 million. So they've got at least another 20 projects. Several of them are reported in this LifeSite News article. Most of them right around $500,000. So I presume that there's probably about 20 of these projects to create tests to detect microscopic viral fragments. Not that somebody is sick. This is all about pre-testing you. This is about creating the idea with all of us that they will preemptively test you, and this is like a pre-crime incarceration. We have detected viral presence on you, and let me tell you, at the levels that they're looking at, they can grab anybody. It's like the test that they used to do for years. They would grab somebody's money. They'd have a stack of money, and they'd say, I think this money is involved in a drug deal. No, it's not. I just came from the bank. Here's my receipt. Well, let's let the dog sniff it. Yeah, the dog sniffs some cocaine on here, so we're going to have to take this money. This money is involved in a drug deal. This is the same trick they're going to be playing on you in terms of viral debris. And if they find any of that viral debris, you're going to go to jail without due process for an indefinite period of time. This is a very dangerous precedent, and they're working very hard to create the technology that whether or not it works, everybody's going to believe that it works. Because why? Because the NIH and the mainstream media will tell you that it works. So if they flag you with a single viral particle, it's off to jail. Of course, maybe there's some other things they didn't like about you as well. The project is going to create a device that's small enough to fit inside a phone or a watch that can directly capture, detect, and identify COVID virus particles. The idea is that the bioreceptors would be able to detect particles of the virus and be able to differentiate between them and other particles that they come into contact with. It would automatically transmit the information to some digital device, so the COVID police can come and lock you down. And listen to this. This is GE's team and their lead research scientist. He says, the Holy Grail, we seek the Holy Grail. We've already got one. Go away, you stupid English types. Holy Grail is to detect a single virus particle. What a ludicrous goal that is. You have an immune system, a single viral particle. It's not something that can make you or anybody else sick. You have to have a certain viral load. That's why they've reluctantly admitted, even at the CDC, well, you got to be symptomatic. We don't have any cases of people who are asymptomatic spreading anything because you're not sick. You know, if you don't have enough of a viral load to have any symptoms or sickness, you can't share that with somebody. And your body has an immune system. That's the other thing. It's now a conspiracy theory to say that you have an immune system. Because the only immunity that you can get is if you buy it from Pfizer or from one of the other corporate partners of our corrupt government. The Holy Grail is to detect a single virus particle. Obsessive, ignorant, ludicrous, to be tyrannical. And so the microchip will be smaller than a dime, with nanowells or tiny pores that can only be activated by a particular molecule. Oh, foolproof. So they have about $10 million. Some of the universities are listed here in this article. University of Washington and then Washington University in St. Louis. Also, both of those have a contract from Fauci's Nazi Institute of Health. Emory University, another $500,000. And then listen to this. These and many others are all part of the Nazi Institute of Health's Rapid Acceleration of Diagnostics program. They call it RADx. And then they have a further subgroup that's going to be developing and rolling out novel technologies for COVID-19 testing. Then a smaller group of RadX, and they call it RadX Radical. See? Super radical. Surge of radicalism. Yeah, these people are radical. Including unconventional screening, whatever that is, biological or physiological markers, new platforms, and point-of-care devices. In other words, have you had your vaccine yet? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't get any health care. Teaming with DARPA, who is creating their gel-like substance. That's where we are now, folks. How did we get there? How do we get to the point where it's acceptable for lying, thieving schemers like Fauci, who has nothing but contempt for your freedom and dignity? How do we get to the point where that political Machiavellian bureaucrat, who, as Carrie Mullis said, will look right into the camera and lie to your face? And we've got some clips of that coming. How do we get to the point where those people are allowed to weaponize every virus and bacteria on Earth and to create a kind of transhumanist man-monkey, right? Why are they allowed to do this? Why are they allowed to have unlimited amounts of money to create these tests that are going to be used to lock each and every one of us down without anybody being sick? Now, you want to talk about pre-crime. You want to talk about tyranny. All the tyranny is coming through this medical dictatorship. I was called out a year ago for being a conspiracy theorist. I was talking about a medical dictatorship. Daily Beast thought that was over the top. Do you think that's over the top anymore? It's going to be the basis of everything that we've seen. It's going to be the medical dictatorship, and these tests are going to be the basis for them locking you down with indefinite detention, going back to the NDAA. It'll be the military as well. They're already using the military to deliver the vaccines. Don't you think they'll have the military? And they got the military, going door to door, even putting it in people's arms? Don't you think they'll have the military going door to door? These tests, shine this thing on you or sniff the air around you. Oh, I'm sorry. I detected a single viral particle somewhere on your presence. We're going to have to put you in detention. I don't know when you're going to get out. No due process. Just go directly to jail. Do not collect $200. Well, here's how we get there. We get there. We get into transhumanism. We get into this cannibalism. We get into all of this because we allow things like abortion to continue, because we use the products of abortion to create our medicine, because we victimize our children from putting masks on their faces when they even admit they have zero risk for this disease that is nothing more than a relabeled actuarial table. And when we experiment with them, play sexual games with them, allow our governmental and institutional, our educational institutions to sexualize them, groom them for pedophilia, to create the idea that children are capable of consenting to sex, because, hey, if they can make the decisions about their gender, then they can do all of this stuff. That's how we get there. You know, the vaccine mandates were put on children first, weren't they? As a condition of going to school. That should have been a wake-up call right there. We have a society, not just in America, but worldwide, that has turned on its kids, that uses its kids, doesn't have a hope in its kids, but we have no concern for minors. They're to be used for our purposes. We use them. The very opposite of what happens when God moves in a society. When that happens, the hearts of the fathers and the mothers are turned to their children, but not in our society. They're turned against their children. Perhaps this is a sign of a change. We have had the Arkansas legislature override the Republican governor, Asa Hutchinson, who vetoed a bill to ban chemical abuse of children for sexualization practices, the puberty blockers for minors. The House bill was known as Save Adolescents from Experimentation Act. Wouldn't that be good if we stopped all the human experimentation, especially on our children? It would ban minors from harmful puberty blockers and from sex reassignment surgery. No, it's mutilation. The Arkansas legislature had to override the governor's veto, and they easily did that. 71-24 in the House, 25-8 in the Senate. But it was important for Asa Hutchinson to do that for his corporate and political mentors at the GOP. Now Alabama State Representative Wes Allen and another state senator, Shay Shelnut, in Alabama are proposing similar similar legislation in their state. We've been watching very closely what happened in Arkansas. They had a very similar proposal that outlaws and prohibits the administration or the issuance of puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and outlaws surgery, transitioning surgery for minors. So we watched that go on, and of course the governor vetoed that, but the legislature overrode that veto, and now it's law in Arkansas. I want to congratulate our counterparts for doing that. For anyone who is a minor, in our bill, we do something very similar. It says this: for anyone that is a minor, these medications, which are powerful medications that seek to arrest natural puberty. You know, we've all been through that. And so puberty is not a disease. Puberty is not a disease. Pedophilia is. And that is really what is at the basis of all of this. The sexualizing of kids, this manipulating of kids. And it was a gradual process. I remember back in the 1990s, the fight at that time, what was really outrageous was in Massachusetts. A father didn't want his 8-year-old in a sex education class, and they weren't teaching anything deviant. They were teaching heterosexual sex. To an 8-year-old, he said, that's not appropriate. I'm the father. I don't think that's appropriate for my child. And they said, we're going to do it anyway. And so he went onto the school grounds and took his child off. They arrested him for trespassing, took him to court. The court said, once you bring your child to school, this is what the judge said. You have abandoned your child to the state, and we will operate in place of the parents. In loco parentis, they call it. And that set the precedent for a lot of this stuff. They operate in place of the parents. And now it's not about normal heterosexual sex. This is about all of their perverse fantasies, from their drag queen story time hours, and you got parents who are dragging their kids to that, instead of trying to drag their kids out of being lectured as a child at 8 years old. Lecture them about, teach them about sex, and you don't want that taught by some strangers that you don't know. Now, you've got judges who are mandating that by the age of 8, because a parent, or supposedly sometimes a child, they say, well, you know, we've talked to this child. We've had these conversations with him at school. This child wants to be a different sex. And so at 8 years old, the judge in some of these divorce cases, like Save James, the judge mandates that by the time James gets 8, he's going to have chemical castration. This is so perverse. It's just unbelievable. I'm just astounded. Every time I cover this, I just can't believe it, even though I've been covering it now for years. Puberty is not a disease. Neither is biological heterosexuality, but these people act as if it is. We want to outlaw and make sure these medications are not available to minors because they're just not mature enough to make those decisions on their own. We want to make sure that we protect them. We want to make sure we protect their bodies. I'm glad this is happening with some state legislatures. You've got to ask yourself, why aren't these heroes like Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise doing this, right? They could at least offer a bill. It's not going to get past Nancy Pelosi, but none of this stuff that they're doing is going to get past Nancy Pelosi. They may as well not even show up if that's going to be the case. There are things that they could do. There are examples that they could set. Alabama legislators are concerned about the harmful effects puberty blockers will have on minors, not to mention the irreversibility of the surgery, when puberty blockers are administered, while so much brain, bone, and muscle development is happening, they depress and restrict the growth of the young person. And when they come off the blockers, they're behind their peers in physical development. 98% of them must go on to take cross-sex hormones to try to catch up to their peers. And so Alan said, we've got laws that prevent doctors from prescribing anabolic steroid hormones for child athletes, even if the parents want them. Why? Because we know that's going to have lifetime consequences for these kids. Very negative. So we're in this to protect our children until they get to the age of maturity. We're going to do the same thing with these people and their perverse sexual fantasies. The Department of Justice is now letting off Portland rioters, as we know, left and right. But this article from Chris Minahan, Information Liberation, points out this could jeopardize their political persecution of people at the Capitol protest. Think about it. In recent weeks, prosecutors have approved deals in at least half a dozen federal felony cases arising from clashes between protesters and law enforcement in Oregon last summer. The arrangements, known as deferred resolution agreements, will leave the defendants with a clean criminal record if they stay out of trouble for a period of time and complete a modest amount of community service. Chris says, remember, folks, as Biden-appointed Department of Justice head Merrick Garland, the guy that Obama was going to put in at Supreme Court to take Scalia's place, Merrick Garland, who is now the Attorney General, said during the confirmation hearing, the Portland riots were no big deal because they happened at night. Yeah, you know, I don't know what the rationale is that. But five of the Portland cases that were recently struck involved felony charges of interfering with police during civil disorder. Some of the defendants are accused of punching or jumping on police officers during the street battles. Yeah, but we got people like Sam who, is just there taking video, not doing anything. He's standing between the velvet ropes, taking video of everything that's going on. No. We're going to nail him to the wall. We're going to send in a SWAT team against him. But the people actually physically, violently attacked the police in Portland, they're letting them go. Civil disorder cases are notable because the charge of police interference is also being wielded by prosecutors in dozens of the criminal cases brought about the January 6th incident in the Capitol. Prosecutors said one of these civil disorder defendants, Alexandra Uten in Portland, used a wooden shield to strike a Portland police officer in the head while he was trying to make the arrest. Exactly the same is what they're saying. Some of these protesters used riot shields to shove police or to obstruct their efforts to secure the building from the mob. Nothing that they can show has the same kind of violence that we saw in Portland. Nothing. And so this 24-year-old, Alexandra Uten, arrested in charge of the felony assault of a police officer at the violent Antifa protest in Portland, quickly released. So while they're releasing them, they're demanding pretrial detention in virtually all the Capitol riot cases. This is why Tucker Carlson pointed out there's two systems of justice. No, it's just injustice. It's one system called injustice. Justice is equally applied. If it's not equally applied, if it's not based on law, it's not justice. Hawaii has a $1 billion a mile rail boondoggle. We've seen this over and over again. Look at California. You know, they got a light rail system. They've now spent $100 billion on a high-speed rail project. They've not gotten that completely finished yet either. This is why this infrastructure nonsense that's being put out there by Biden isn't going to go anywhere, literally. You think about this. They've got $80 billion for rail projects in this $2.2 trillion infrastructure, because most of the infrastructure bill is not about infrastructure. It's things like child care, things like that, paying off their political allies. And yet, if Hawaii has got a project that's costing them $1 billion per mile, that means that they could do a whole grand total of 80 miles. of light rail. Long delayed, over budget, 20-mile rail project in Hawaii. That'd chew up a quarter of their budget right there. It began as one of the quote-unquote shovel-ready programs. Remember that? Yeah, we know it with the shoveling. Projects funded by the Obama-Biden stimulus programs a decade ago, never completed. So for 10 years they've been doing this. $1 billion a mile, still not completed. So you had Joni Ernst taking them on over this boondoggle infrastructure, talking about California's estimated $100 billion high-speed rail project that's still not done. She said instead of Biden's slogan of Build Back Better, I say we should change the slogan to bail out bankrupt boondoggles, because she said that's really what this is going to go to. They're not going to build anything new. They're just going to pour more money into these money pits that have been dragging on for decades. Citing the Hawaii rail project's failings, she pushed for the passage of her billion-dollar boondoggle ban. A lot of bees there. Babylon bees. To stop federal spending on projects of $1 billion or more over budget, or if they're 5 years or more behind. Which brings us to the other big part, biggest part, perhaps, of this infrastructure dream. And that is the electric car infrastructure. And whether or not these people are able to get their charging network everywhere. Then we have another issue, and that is, do we have the infrastructure and to power the grid? Look at what's happened here in oil-rich Texas. Because we decided we'd go with windmills and with solar energy, we nearly lost our power this week. But there's another bottleneck in it, and that is being able to build batteries. This is a perfect example of why we don't want the government managing our economy as they have on steroids this last year, creating shortages everywhere, creating shortages on shelves while the farmers are having to destroy product on the farm. They say that they're concerned that the world's battery supply will be able to keep pace with everybody switching over to electric cars because they can get subsidies, because they want to become mobility companies. And that's really the bottom line. We can talk about what the cars run on. That really doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter. There's a lot of different ways that you can have zero emissions. You can have zero emissions with diesel cars. And you can have zero emissions from coal power plants. That's just a matter of technology. And it really doesn't matter whether you use lithium batteries or whether you use cars that are electric based on hydrogen. That really doesn't matter. The reason that they're going to the battery-operated cars, see, if they did it with electric cars that were hydrogen, then when you filled up with that special, specially packaged hydrogen at a hydrogen filling station, they could give you a road tax. Well, they don't want that. And that's the reason why they have completely ignored that branch of electric cars, because their real purpose is not to save the environment. Their real purpose is not to have electric cars. Their real purpose is to make sure that they have to have a justification to tax you by the mile. Because if you just hook up to electricity, anybody can use electricity off the grid. They can't put a special infrastructure tax on that. So therefore, they've got to put a black box in your car to track everything that you do. That's why they're focused on the battery electric cars. There's every other way to do this. Every source of fuel, including hydrogen for electric cars, all of that's got to be swept away. You can only have the battery-operated electric cars. In the same way that we're seeing, you can't have hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin or whatever it is. If you're feeling sick, you can't have any of that. Vitamin D, we're going to lock people up if they sell silver. Everything is off the table except for a vaccine. They have something they want to do to us because, and it's not even the vaccine that is the key thing. It's the control that comes with the vaccine and the vaccine passports. It's not the electric car, the battery car. It's the control that comes with having that black box in your car. Oh, well, I have to have that because otherwise I won't know how much of the road you're using. That's why they're relentless on these different measures. You have to see where they're headed. Everything that they're doing is headed towards controlling and restricting our movements and then monitoring everything that we do. The problem for them, however, for the batteries, is just basic economics. So, ignoring their longer-term agenda of tracking and control, which goes back again to geospatial intelligence, anticipating who their political enemies are, and acting in a preemptive way to strike against their enemies. See, they're going to war with us. They went to war with us with economic sanctions, just like they do when they go to war with somebody else with an undeclared war. And then, just like they have made it standard procedure to preemptively strike people that they perceive to be a threat, that was what we used to call a day of infamy when the Japanese did that to us at Pearl Harbor. But now that's our modus operandi. So our MO is to go after people in a preemptive way. And since you're the enemy, they're going to come after you preemptively as well. Anticipatory intelligence, pre-crime, all of the sci-fi dystopian things that you've seen. But looking at the nuts and bolts of this, they said, not only are we having a short supply of semiconductors, so much so that it's shutting down multiple factories from multiple car manufacturers. I talked about that this last week. They said, same thing is going to happen even more so with batteries. In a conservative scenario, we expect lithium-ion battery demand to increase at least tenfold by 2030. And it takes time to scale up the mining operation. And that's one of the key things that they are lacking in it. It's not only having the factories to make the batteries, but it's also having the raw materials. They don't even have a supply chain for the minerals. And see, this is, again, goes back to iPencil, Leonard Reed. There wasn't a central committee, an infrastructure committee that decided they were going to make a pencil. No, it was something that just responded to market forces. And it was the collective intelligence of everybody out there working together that came up with this, not some genius central planner in Washington or Moscow or Beijing doing it. And so this is why, this is actually our hope. our hope, it's kind of like the dark hope about this Supreme Court thing. It's a radical plan, and we're going to talk about that coming up. It's a radical plan. If they're able to pull it off, everybody realizes that it's so radical. That in and of itself would backfire against them. And it would also backfire against them in the sense that it would delegitimize the institution. And that would be a good thing. Because the institution has been delegitimized for a very long time, just not in the eyes of the public. So if we can get people to see what it actually is, if we can pull the curtain back, and show them what is happening. If we can show them that the emperor has no clothes, that would be a good thing. And people might do something about it. Now, the dangerous thing about that is do not underestimate the passivity of the public. We've learned that lesson in the last year as well. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back, read some of your letters, get into SCOTUS, as well as vaccines, and what is happening on this America Held Hostage Day 398. And we will have joining us later in the program, Ammon Bundy, giving us an update on what is happening with his struggles over being persecuted for not wearing a mask and what he is doing with the peoplesrights.org. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. new audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Yes, as we have, I'm going to talk about the Supreme Court, some amazing statements by Nancy Pelosi, but let me just read a couple of letters that people have sent us, and if you'd like to send us some communication, we appreciate hearing from you. We can't get back to every single person. I try to answer as many people as I can. But DavidKnightShow@ProtonMail.com. DavidKnightShow@ProtonMail.com. Again, if you would like to support the broadcast, you can send a contribution via PayPal to that email address. We also have Subscribestar. The channel there is The David Knight Show. And you can make a single contribution there. Or if you just make a small amount, you can start even at $5. And if you can do that on a monthly basis, that really does help. It goes a long way. If we have a lot of people contributing a small amount, that works. If you want to find the places where the program is broadcast, you can find the live streams, DLive and Trovo. The links are at thedavidknightshow.com, thedavidknightshow.com. You'll find links to live stream, all the different video channels that we have. We have BitChute, YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey. We put up content there every day. We have the full show as well as cuts from the show that are shorter. I give people on a particular topic. And then we have links to all the different places that you can find the podcast. And the podcast now goes under two different names because we were able to get back the point of broadcast. Typically what you do is you have a podcast host like Spreaker is one. Another one that we've been using for a while is Podbean. We could not get our name from Spreaker until a week ago. And so now the David Knight Show podcast has resumed. Prior to that, for several months, we were doing The Real David Knight Show podcast out of Podbean. So we're going to keep that going in both places. But you can find all the links there as well as to other places where you can support us at thedavidknightshow.com. This letter is from a listener in North Carolina, and I'm afraid I got this late, so I didn't have time to tell people to contact their representatives in North Carolina. This is about a bill that they have in North Carolina to oppose mandatory vaccine passports being imposed by businesses, and that's the key thing. I'm glad to see, however, that there are some Republicans in the legislature and states. DeSantis realized that in Florida. But all the rest of these governors who've been saying, well, we're not going to do vaccine passports. You've got Abbott. You've got Brad Little in Idaho. You have, I think it was the Utah Republican governor also said that. They're faking it. They're saying the same thing that Biden is saying. Well, we're not going to do this from the government, and we're not even going to allow our contractors to do this, to push this on you. But I can't do anything to stop businesses from kicking you out of their business because of your health conditions. Oh, really? What was all that stuff about the Americans with Disabilities Act? What was all that stuff about Jim Crow laws? Things like that. We're not even allowed, if this goes through, you're going to have businesses that are going to say, well, you're not going to sit at the end of the lunchroom counter. You're not even going to get in my store. Maybe I won't even serve you sitting outside. We need to not allow that to happen. And so I'm glad that DeSantis realizes that. I'm glad that there's some legislators in North Carolina who understand that. They point out when asked about mandatory vaccination and vaccine passports, nearly all the Democrats responded that they, quote, do not support passports. This is a political response. Like many Republicans, it's true that most Democrats do not support government passports. But when asked if they believe in private sector businesses, corporations, schools, mandating passports, the conversation changes completely. Roy Cooper, who's a Democrat governor of North Carolina, and the Biden administration both realize full well that there are too many constitutional issues with a government passport system, especially a federal government passport system. So they have devised a plan to support the private sector vaccine mandate passports rollout, which will create the same medical apartheid system that began with masks. Let me tell you, this is always the plan. It was over a year ago I reported that the New England Journal of Medicine was conspiring to do this. Conspiring to do this. They were working with, because it wasn't just the idea of one op-ed piece. No, no, no. It was the New England Journal of Medicine, and it was other people. They were working together to deprive you of your God-given rights, to deprive you of your rights that are recognized under the Constitution, and that is in and of itself a federal crime. These people conspired to deprive you of rights. That is a federal crime. The New England Journal of Medicine and these politicians who were working with them, they said, we don't want this to be done by law because we don't want to have any challenges in courts. We don't want to have any due process challenges. We want this to roll out through the private sector, through businesses and corporations. That was always the plan. And all through the year when I opposed this, when I said from the very beginning, this is what Trump is doing to us. He is the Trojan horse. He's creating this vaccine, and this is how it's going to be used. These people are even talking about it, strategizing. They said, well, Trump isn't going to mandate this. And I said to all these people, never dawned on them, could never get through to them on social media, that nobody's going to mandate this from the federal government, not even Biden. And that's where we are today. Biden is no different from Trump. Trump would have taken this approach as well, just as he did on free speech. If he's going to say on free speech, well, I can't do anything about that. You know, this is corporations that own the internet now. They can do whatever they want. Well, these are corporations that own the public square now. These are the Wall Street corporations that I decided were essential when I took the final steps to destroy the rest of the middle class by declaring them to be non-essential and shutting down their businesses. So now the only businesses that are left, the businesses that own everything, the businesses that are financed with unlimited amounts of money from Wall Street, and with government contracts, because they cooperate, those businesses will tell you what to do and say, I'm not violating the law any more than the social media companies are violating your free speech with censorship. That's the pattern. Always was. That was always the plan. The bill becoming law is going to be the only thing that stands between you and your children and mandatory vaccinations and passports. We must take the masks off. We must refuse to participate and this medical apartheid. So they said there's three ways to break free from this unconstitutional communism that has swept our state of North Carolina. They said, by the way, as a preface to that, they said yesterday was Legislative Action Day. Over 1,000 people signed up to come advocate for freedom issues, but only 150 showed up. If we can't garner more support for freedom and constitutional rights, and for personal bodily autonomy, there is no hope for reversing the course in North Carolina. There are three steps that we have to take to break free of this. Number one, judicially. You can support the NCC4CR lawsuit. That's the organization. Their site is NCC4CR.com. Legislatively, we need 10-person delegate teams in all 100 North Carolina counties to show up in person one day per month while the legislature is in session. Nearly all of the legislators we spoke to yesterday told us that until people are willing to take a stand for their freedom and advocate for their rights, nothing will change in North Carolina. It is almost, or anywhere else, it is almost as though people have come to simply accept communism as the new normal. Emails will not change anything. We must advocate in person. This is why they want to shut us down in person. Thirdly, and finally, civil disobedience. Take the masks off. Pull your children from schools that are requiring masks or temperature checks or social distancing. Do not participate in athletic events, extracurricular activities, or church events in which your children are defiled by masks. They were never about health. They were never about stopping the spread of respiratory virus. They are a symbol of government propaganda. They are a lie to remind everyone to be afraid. They're extremely harmful to human health, and they're here to stay if we don't refuse. And I'll add one more thing to that. They are the perfect placeholder for the lies that they have told us continuously to enforce MMR vaccine mandates for school. Your vaccine doesn't protect you. It protects other people. That's absolute absurdist nonsense. It's Kafkaesque, Orwellian nonsense. If your vaccine doesn't protect you, my vaccine isn't going to protect you. Come on. Let's be serious about this. You want to talk about all these antibodies and everything and how it generates antibodies? Well, fine. If it generates antibodies in your body, then you're protected. If it doesn't, you're not. It's just that simple. People can't think through that simple syllogism. And so, because they couldn't think that through, then they fell for the same thing with a mask. My mask doesn't protect me. Your mask protects me. It's a herd mentality, not herd immunity. One more letter here. 2-year-old kicked off a flight. My daughter and son-in-law were getting off a flight from Florida back to Ohio by way of Newark. And my son-in-law's words, he said, on Monday, April the 5th, there was a Spirit Airlines flight leaving Orlando headed to Newark, New Jersey. There was a family with several children. They all have their masks on, with the exception of their 2-year-old, who they stated suffered from seizures. Apparently, a flight attendant came up to them and told them they needed to put the mask on the 2-year-old. Sounds like the parents were being very reasonable, explaining that their 2-year-old had seizures, but the flight attendant insisted that they put the mask on. Eventually, she came back and said, "You're not being compliant. I need you to get off the flight." They ended up coming back because all the rest of the passengers were outraged. See, this is how this stops. We finally had enough. You can have one little petty tyrant on a power trip, bossing everybody around, and that'll happen until we all stand up and say, that's enough. That's enough. Thank you, Lowell, for that story. That's a perfect example of what needs to happen. Now let's talk a little bit about the Supreme Court. Pelosi comes up with trying to make a justification for packing the Supreme Court. And if you stop and think about this, it fluctuated a little bit, went up and down. It got fixed about 4 or 5 years after the Civil War and the Grant administration, and it stayed at 9 ever since then. Now, in the 1930s, you had FDR, who was facing some opposition on his radical restructuring of our society and from the Supreme Court. So he just decided that he would get rid of the Supreme Court. And that blew back on him. As popular as FDR was, that blew up in his face. So, you know, there's that. There's also the ideas I've pointed out the last several days of how we need to get over the idea that, you know, conservatives have embraced this idea that we don't like the Supreme Court when it dictates things to us arbitrarily that we don't like. But maybe we could get the Supreme Court, if we could pack it with people that we like, maybe we could get them to dictate things that we do like. The problem with that, the benevolent dictator argument for the Supreme Court, that's a failed strategy. And so perhaps if we discredit the institution, if these people are actually able to do it and don't pay a political price, this might be the final wake-up call for some people to start doing things like nullification at the state level using the 9th and 10th Amendment, the anti-commandeering acts that I pointed out in the last couple of days. But here's Nancy Pelosi's justification for all of this. She said the growth of the United States might necessitate expanding the size of the Supreme Court. Oh, really? Really? She says, you know, we're bringing in all these other people so rapidly that we got to expand the Supreme Court. No. She said, the growth of the country, the size of our country, the growth of our challenges in terms of the economy, etc., might necessitate such a thing. Well, the reality is that what really needs to happen, if you want to make it representative, you know, they said, we've got to have a Supreme Court that grows so it can represent America. Supreme Court doesn't represent you. They're not elected. They're not accountable to you. You can't get rid of them. They do their own thing. They're like Fauci. They stay there for life. Lifetime bureaucrats. That's now become the rule. And that's how we get these people who rule us without any regard to the law, Constitution, or our God-given rights. But the what really should happen, if we are really going to have representation, this is the irony that people like Nadler would say, well, we got to have better representation, so we need more people in the Supreme Court. Or people like Pelosi would say, we got to grow the Supreme Court because we got an expanding United States. They need to go back, as I pointed out many times in the past, to what the intention was in the Constitution, to limit the number of people represented by these congressmen to 30,000 initially, then they changed it to 50,000. Of course, even though they wrote that in the Constitution, as Richard Proctor pointed out in our many conversations, they never obeyed that. Even the people who wrote it didn't obey it. That's why you don't want to have a constitutional convention. They didn't even obey that rule. But if we did, and I think it's a good idea, we would have 11,000 congressmen and women. Right? if we had one per every, just in the House would have 11,000 members. And we could do that. We don't need to get everybody physically in one space. As a matter of fact, they're freaked out about everybody being in one space. They're all having their meetings with masks on their faces and everything. So they could all just do it by Zoom. They could all electronically vote. You don't have to get them all in one place. They could communicate with, they've locked us down. They don't need to physically congregate in one location. Think about how different Congress would be if we had 11,000 people because they wouldn't have so much power individually. Or even if you went up to the limit of 50,000 people, you'd still have about 6,600 people in Congress. They're not going to go grow Congress. They will try to grow the Supreme Court. And it's amazing to me, I keep seeing in these articles people saying, well, right now there's a 6-3 conservative majority. No, there isn't. It's 5-4. Look at the recent decisions for the last several years, right? Roberts has always gone to the anti-constitutional side. I say to the liberal side, to the leftist side. He's gone to the statist side that says that the Constitution is a living document and they can interpret it however they want. The text doesn't matter. That's where Roberts is right now. And so right now, and last several decisions we've had, after they got back up to 9, 5-4 all the time. So what they would do is they would take this to, an 8-5 majority for the people who don't believe there should be a constitution. Now, as you're seeing reported in many different places, the White House, it's being reported by the Daily Caller, that the White House shoots down court packing for now. I didn't really take it that way. Listen to what Jen Psaki, press secretary, said when directly confronted about this at the press conference, whether or not they're going to pursue this court packing.
Go ahead, Kristen.
Thanks, Jen. Does the president support the bill just introduced by the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee to add 4 seats to the Supreme Court?
Well, just last week, the president signed an executive order creating the bipartisan commission on the Supreme Court of the United States, a bipartisan group of over 30 constitutional and legal experts who are examining a range of questions about proposed potential reforms to the Supreme Court. And one of the issues they'll look at is, of course, the size of the court, but they'll also look at the court's role in the constitutional system, the length of service, the turnover of justices. And they're going to come back to the president with a report on what their discussions are and what their findings are. So he's going to wait for that to play out and wait to read that report.
So, this isn't just coming from some obscure member of Congress. This is coming from the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. So is the president, is the White House frustrated that Chairman Nadler perhaps didn't wait for this report from the commission that President Biden just called for last week?
No, the president believes that it's important to take a look at a range of points of view, whether they are progressive or conservative, different sets of legal opinions. He looks forward to assessing that himself, and I expect he will not have more to convey about any recommendations or views he'll have until he reads that report. But he certainly understands that members of Congress have a range of views, and they're going to propose legislation. He may or may not support it.
So I just want to be clear: the president does or does not think that this bill is premature.
He believes that members of Congress have the right to put forward legislation on issues they...
So you get the idea. You're not going to get a straight answer. And she's telling us that it's a bipartisan commission. You can bet that they're going to have conservatives and Republicans there arguing for the status quo. No, that's not going to happen. This is to say that we're going to be driven by the data, like Fauci. I'm not trying to impose this in a radical agenda. I'm not throwing a temper tantrum like FDR. No, this will be driven by the commission, and it's a bipartisan commission, and of course everybody's got their own ideas, and we're not going to slap them down. I'm not a dictator or anything. I just want to make sure that we don't ever have another election that is won by any Republicans anywhere. So we have the H.R. 1 to change the elections, and then we're going to change the Supreme Court, and we're going to change everything. These people are the most radical factions you've ever seen. And Jonathan Turley commented on this. He called it a hostile takeover of the court. He said, this is about as subtle as a B-52 run. I mean, it is an astonishing act. It dispenses with any pretense of principle to say raw muscle play. It's like a hostile takeover of the court. And I don't really understand the political logic here. But what really concerns me is that this is really a test of principle for Democrat members. I will be watching today to see what the senators, what House members step forward and say that this is wrong, because this is raw court packing. He said, this is raw, unadulterated court packing. It's always been viewed as wrong and as radical for FDR. Some of the very icons these liberal members revere, as do many of us, people like Justice Ginsburg, staunchly opposed this idea. So here's Jonathan Turley, who revered Ginsburg. And again, why is it that we talk about the politics of the justice? Because they're political decisions. Their decisions are political. They're not based on an interpretation of the law. They're reading in their political positions into this. They don't even claim to care about what the text says. Scalia claimed to care about what the text said, but of course he also got it wrong on things like the Fourth Amendment. Anyway, he goes on to say, I never thought I would see the day when the House Judiciary Chairman would stand up for raw court packing. It's really breathtaking. And so you've got a House Republican who is proposing a constitutional amendment to prevent the Supreme Court expanding. Representative Andy Biggs, head of the conservative House Freedom Caucus. As they point out, this has absolutely no chance of passing. Hang on a second, I got to get a drink. I'm about the only one in the family that doesn't have a sore throat, and it hasn't started yet, but we'll wait and see. The Supreme Court must faithfully interpret the Constitution, he said. Well, there are so many things that we could add to the Constitution that it would be important to add to the Constitution if anybody in Congress or anybody in the Supreme Court actually cared about the Constitution anymore, but they don't. Let's take a quick look at the back and forth that happened in Congress. As a matter of fact, between Jordan, Scalise, and others, as America's held hostage on day 398. They're continuing to push this OCD, other humans are dangerous idea to everybody in every way that they can. And I think one of the best examples of this is the article that was put on the Drudge Report, how the garlic breath test can tell if you're likely to catch COVID. And what they're saying is, you don't want to get close to other humans, just like you don't want to get close to somebody that's been eating garlic at lunch. And if you're close enough that you could smell the garlic on their breath, then you're close enough that they can get you sick with COVID. So keep your distance. Don't get close to anybody. Even if you're in their presence, don't get close. Arm's length or further. They said they had a slogan at the beginning of the pandemic: hands, face, space. Hands, face, space. And that's what's turned everybody into being OCD. They put the slogan on billboards, on TV ads in the UK. And now, they said Sky News and the people from the UK government are saying we need to make the messaging space, hands. Space, hands. Keep away from other people. The virus transmits through conversational distance within 1 meter. We call it the garlic breath distance. Masking is fine, but it's the indoor airborne environment that needs to be improved. And that can be done with ventilation. So if you can smell their breath through your mask, they're too close. Of course, the masks don't work. Said that from the very beginning. You know, you can smell somebody's breath and you could get the virus from it. Smoke. Look at the many times we've shown pictures of people exhaling smoke through the mask. And through the mask, not just around the edges. And of course, when it goes out the edges, it gets comes out as jets, goes farther, smaller particles. He agreed the lockdown measures rather than vaccines had been the main drivers. See, they're taking credit for the lockdown because they don't want you to ever be close to people again. That's more important than the vaccines. Even if you get the vaccine, we're still going to lock you down and mask you down. You do not want to be around other people. If one in two people have antibodies, that means that the immune barrier will reduce the spread of that virus in an indoor environment. But, you know, you're still breathing the same air. And, of course, they want you to believe that you're not going to have any natural antibodies. You can only get those antibodies through their vaccine. So they want to make you ever more obsessive and compulsive as we go into year number two, well into it. Where is Dr. Fauci? Asked Real Clear Markets. As another coronavirus myth dies. What myth is this? Well, this is the myth about hands. Remember, they said, well, we're going to take the hands equation out of this. It's going to be space. Because we now know, and we actually, I reported this at the very beginning of all this, you had in Germany, you had people go through and do scientific experiments. You had a scientist went in, a family that tested positive, and I think they actually had symptoms of flu. And they took them out, and he looked all over the apartment, and he didn't find it. Couldn't find coronavirus on any surface. And so he said, so it's not surviving. I mean, no, there's another explanation. Maybe it didn't exist in the first place, but nevertheless, it didn't survive. And yet you had all the people, as they point out, Real Clear Markets, they've been quarantining packages shipped to them. If it gets dropped off at their residence, the people who are totally paranoid about this, totally OCD, will wait 48 hours before they open up the box and its contents, just to make sure there's no cooties on it. When the coronavirus, fearful, actually ventured outside, they wore gloves, and were still afraid to touch anything. Humans were suddenly a lethal menace, and that's what they're still selling to people. Don't get close to people. Don't touch them by any means. But the main thing is that they had to risk their lives by being in public. The science reverent, more than masked up, they wiped everything down that they came near to. If they had to go outside, they would wear their gloves and then wipe everything down as well. Even though the airlines were sending out texts ahead of boarding, meant to comfort the nail-biting about the plane interiors that had been thoroughly scrubbed, and we saw the pictures of the robots going through the ultraviolet lights and everything, passengers still brought their own wipes onto the planes, or they accepted wipes from the flight attendants in order to double up on the work that had been done by the maintenance crew. Hilton Hotels essentially co-brands its rooms with Lysol. Apparently, all the hand-wringing about surfaces was a bit overdone. Last week, the CDC announced that the risk of contracting the virus by touching a contaminated surface was somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 in 10,000. Another myth born out of hysteria has bitten the dust. And we can only hope that the celebrity Fauci is asked to comment on the new findings. Don't expect that will happen. It's worth traveling back in time. Here's the key thing, I think. I didn't know this. 40 years ago, before Fauci was put in as head of the NIH's infectious disease branch there, Fauci, in 1983, asserted in a paper that, quote, routine close contact, as within a family household, could spread AIDS. To say that Fauci was wrong brings new meaning to understatement. At the same time, Fauci's false assumption in 83, it doesn't indict him. Doctors were flying blind then as they worked tirelessly to learn more. No, actually, it does indict him. He's been lying to your face, as Kerry Mullis pointed out. He said he was using the PCR test to try to create a link between the HIV, the virus, and AIDS. And Kerry said, you're misusing the PCR test. If there is a link, you can't prove it with my test. But that was the gold standard that created the link. And if you pushed back against that, then you wanted gay people to die. And so they came after Kerry Mullis. Except that Fauci was the one who was killing people because he would not talk about the real issues with the disease. His incorrect assumptions from long ago yet remind us that there's a lot that we don't know. It also reminds us that he is always pompously making statements about things as if they're settled science without any uncertainty whatsoever and demanding that we adjust our lives according to his dictates. You see, we weren't solely against lockdowns because we deny science or that we don't care about the virus or didn't believe that it existed. Says real clear politics. In truth, we're against the lockdowns because freedom produces abundant information in addition to being a virtue of its own. And again, that's where I was at the very beginning. I said, even if this is real, good chance that it was, since we know that Fauci's working on gain of function. This is not the right way to approach this. If we keep a free society, if people have their own, take their own precautions and decide when that is necessary, we will do better. If you give them this power, they're going to bust the supply chains. They're going to destroy our freedom, and we'll never get it back. And that's exactly what they're pointing out. As they go on to say, now people are now putting more faith in computers than they do in other humans. And this has been something that's been around for a long time. Before we had all the pronouncements from experts, when I was going through college, there was the reverence for computer printouts, which is really quite ludicrous when you look back at how primitive the computers were then. If you had a printout that showed that you had done a computer simulation, that's why it carried no weight for me from the very beginning, even before I realized all the false assumptions and the garbage computer program that was behind the Imperial College of London's data. From the very beginning, I was not impressed with it because I know that if you've got bad data, if you've got bad models, garbage in, garbage out. And that was really hammered into us in engineering. Don't trust this just because the answer pops up on your calculator. You know, one of the things that was hammered into us, my instructor, because we were like the first class going through that didn't learn to use slide rules. That's how old I am. But but it was like, okay, you're getting this answer and it's going to calculate it out to like 9 decimal points. Don't put that down on your as an answer. If you put that down on an answer, I'm going to mark it wrong because you don't understand that the data that is coming in here is not going to be able to give you that kind of accuracy. And that was something that people who did slide rules understood, that they would not carry out to that many different digits. But after the computer started doing that, I was like, oh, yeah, it's all the way down to 9 digits here. Do you find yourself reaching for the calculator, even for really simple math problems? People are actually more willing to trust a computer than their fellow man. And I'll give you another anecdote here. I went to, in between college and high school and college, I took a trip with a group of similarly aged people, European tour, typical American thing, you know, like 9 countries in 14 days type of thing. And the woman who was the tour guide was constantly getting lost when she'd get off the bus. We'd get off the bus and we'd go walk around and look at something, and then she'd go back and say, where was the bus, you know? And everybody in the group would go, it was over there. And she would go, over and over again, this would happen. And over again, she would say, it's funny how Americans just have an uncanny sense of direction. And I thought about that. I thought, well, why is that? And even then I realized that it was because we drove cars. And in those days, we didn't have a GPS sitting in our car to give us turn-by-turn directions. We were not riding on buses. We were not riding on subways or trams. we were driving our own cars. And that helped us to remember, you know, we had to, out of necessity, have to have some kind of an idea of where you've been and where you're going and how to get back to where you were. Because you typically didn't drive around with a map. You took a map on a vacation, maybe, but you didn't drive around town that way. And so that helped us to think. And that is kind of atrophied now. Atrophied even with me, as I come to rely on the navigation apps to get around, especially places that I'm not familiar with. So you don't read maps anymore. You don't think about this kind of stuff. So it is kind of making us dependent because it's easier for us. And all of this stuff, you know, stay away from people. If you're close enough that you can smell the garlic on their breath, you're too close. Keep your hands covered all the time. And then rely on computers. You want to interact with people through computers. They're more trustworthy anyway. MSN, talking about introverts who are dreading ever going back to normal because this is what they're turning everybody into. They know that if they can keep you locked down long enough, they can keep you in this kind of mindset. So as we talk about that, and as we talk about the rule of Fauci and how he cynically lies to everybody, I mean, is there any question for most people that he is a dyed-in-the-wool liar? We all know him now, as well as Carrie Mullis does, or did. But he is an icon of the left. It was important, I guess, for Jim Jordan to challenge his credibility, but at the same time, he didn't really challenge him on the fundamental assumptions. Let me play for you a little bit of the back and forth that happened between Jim Jordan and Fauci yesterday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Fauci, when is the time? When is the time?
And of course, he's wearing a mask as he's asking these questions.
In your written statement, you say, now is not the time to pull back on masking, physical distancing, and avoiding congregate settings. When is the time? When do Americans get their freedom back? Can you put your microphone on, please?
Sorry. When we get the level of infection in this country low enough that it is not a really high threat.
What is low enough? Give me a number. What,
low enough that it's not really high.
We had 15 days to slow the spread, turned into 1 year of lost liberty. What metrics, what measures, what has to happen before Americans get their freedoms back?
My message, Congressman Jordan, is to get as many people vaccinated as quickly as we possibly can.
It can only be vaccines.
Level of infection in this
There's no treatment for this deadly
it is
disease.
No longer a threat. That is when.
You're the threat.
And I believe when that
You're
happens,
the threat.
You will see.
What determines
You're the
when?
Virus.
I'm sorry.
What? What measure? What, I mean, are we just going to continue this forever? Or when do we get to the point?
It's like
what
the
measure,
Afghanistan
what standard,
war.
What objective outcome do we have to reach before Americans get their liberty and freedoms back?
You know,
when are you going to give it back to us?
Liberty and freedom, I look at it as a public health measure to prevent people from dying and going to the hospital.
You don't think Americans' liberties have been threatened the last year, Dr. Fauci? They've been assaulted. Their liberties have.
I don't look at this as a liberty thing, Congressman Jordan.
Well, that's obvious.
As a public health thing.
But
I disagree with you on that.
You think the Constitution is suspended during a
public health
a virus
versus liberty, safety versus
it's
liberty?
Certainly not.
This will end for sure when we get the level of infection very low. It is now at such a high level, there's a threat again of major surges.
Dr. Fauci, over the last year, Americans' First Amendment rights have been completely attacked. Your right to go to church, your right to assemble, your right to petition your government, freedom of the press, freedom of speech have all been assaulted. I mean, for a year now. Americans haven't been able to go to church. Even today, when they go to church, they're limited in the size of worshipers who can meet. Your right to assemble? Oh, my goodness. We had a curfew last fall in Ohio. You had to be in your home at 10. In Pennsylvania, you had to be in your home. When you're in your home, you had to wear a mask. In Vermont, when you're in your home, you didn't have to wear a mask, Dr. Fauci, because you weren't allowed to have people over to your house.
When you're in the Congress, you got to talk with a mask on your face,
your
don't you, Jim?
For a year, American citizens haven't been able to come to their capital to petition their government to talk to their representatives and freedom of the press. These very pictures that Representative Scalise just showed you and talked about, Guess what? The press isn't allowed in those facilities. The press is not, the Biden administration will not let the press in there. And certainly freedom of speech. I mean, freedom, governor of our third largest state meets with
Jim Jordan just pulled a mask up. It slipped down below his nose. Got to keep that obedience going.
Dare to disagree with Dr. Fauci? So I just want to know, when do Americans get their First Amendment liberties back?
You know, I don't think anything was censured because they felt they couldn't disagree with me. I think you're making this a personal thing, and it isn't.
It's not a personal thing.
No, you are. That is exactly what you're doing.
No, your recommendations carry a lot of weight, Dr. Fauci. We just had the chair of the Financial Services Committee said she loves you, and you're the greatest thing in the world.
Will my the gentleman recommendations yield?
They're not recommendations
Will
or orders.
Will the gentleman yield?
No, it's my
now, can I answer the question, please? My recommendations are not a personal recommendation. It's based on the CDC
personal
guidance,
dictate.
which is
and
which
I'm
is
asking the question, what measures
the circular
have
logic?
To be
it's not me, it's the CDC.
Before Americans get their First Amendment liberties back.
I just told you that.
You haven't given anything specific. You said we hope when this tell me specifically.
Right now, we have about 60,000 infections a day, which is a very large risk.
60,000 a day?
We're not talking about liberties. We're talking about a pandemic that has killed 560,000 Americans.
I get that.
According to your numbers.
And I don't disagree with that.
Hear that? I don't disagree with that.
But I also stand it's pretty serious when businesses have been shut down. People can't go to church. People can't assemble in their own homes with their friends, with their families. People can't go to a loved one's funeral. People can't get to their government, petition their representative to redress their grievances. Right. I also understand the First Amendment's.
Sorry. Wrong button there. That was my fault. I couldn't take any more Jim Jordan. You know what? This guy is, the Germans called it Sturm und Drang. Storm and stress. The way William Shakespeare describes somebody like Jim Jordan, a walking shadow. A poor player that struts and frets his hour on the stage. A tale told by an idiot. Full of sound and fury, but signifying nothing. If you're going to sit there and accept his bogus numbers, if you're not going to challenge it, I understand it's very dangerous and we have to do this, but please tell me when you're going to permit me to have this back. Because, you know, I've got to complain to you to put on a show for my constituents. I'm not going to do anything to challenge you. I'm not even going to let my mask slip down over my nose, under my nose. And if it does, I'll lift it up. If you want to do something, Jim, then why don't you take the mask off and defy this? Challenge Pelosi. I know she's got a rule that you got to wear a mask. So wear the mask in. When the cameras come on, take the mask off. And then watch them all scramble. Make them drag you out of the chamber with the armed guys. Make a statement. Lead. Instead of just complaining about it, this is why nothing is going to happen from Washington. It's going to be us, and we're going to have to do that. Each and every one of us is going to have to do that. The lies and the prevarications about this, well, you know, it's like my duty here is about safety and public health, and I don't really care about liberty. Is that news? Oh, that was big news. Everybody was putting that, you know, look at this. Fauci doesn't care about liberty. Are you kidding me? That's supposed to be news? That's exactly what Jim Jordan wanted. That's the only purpose of that exchange. So he could wrap himself in the flag and do absolutely nothing except kowtow. Wear the mask, pull it up over your nose if it slips down. Talk about how, yes, I know, it's very dangerous. And I believe all of your figures about 500,000 people dying. I'm not going to question any of that. Not going to question any of your measures. I just want to know, do you have an idea of when this war against America is going to end? No, it's exactly like the Afghanistan war. Ain't going to end. You know, when we talk about liberty versus safety, let's understand liberty is not safe. But it's a lot safer than tyranny. It's a lot safer than tyranny. And when we look at what is happening with us, it's asking him these questions is like asking Lindsey Graham or John McCain or Liz Cheney, well, when is it going to be enough in Afghanistan? What is the definition of winning in Afghanistan? At least they have the integrity to say never. Yeah, Liz Cheney, when asked that, just said, we're never leaving. Never. Ever. Fauci doesn't have that integrity. He's too much of a politician. And of course, Jim Jordan doesn't have the integrity to push back on it. That's what all of these show trials have been for the last 4 years. No matter how patently obvious the lies about Russian collusion and all this other stuff to get Trump out with the coup attempt, nobody did anything about it. They held hearing after hearing. They hold hearing after hearing about the censorship from social media giants. Nobody does anything about it. It's just simply to show you that they understand the problem and they basically agree with you, but they're not going to do anything about it. Congress is absolutely useless. They turned over all of their authority to the Supreme Court, to the bureaucracy long ago, and they don't do anything except the Sturm und Drang every once in a while. No, he's not going to challenge Pelosi. He's not going to challenge any of the fake numbers from Fauci. Yeah, I don't see this as a liberty thing, Congressman Jordan. I look at it as a public health thing. Oh, listen to that. Listen to what he had to say. You really needed him to say that? To know that that's what he's saying? As one article on Zero Hedge has a part of the exchange, they said, Jordan said, are we going to be here 2 years from now wearing a mask? And Dr. Fauci, they say, mumbled a shockingly disrespectful response. You're ranting again. Fauci doesn't respect us. Fauci doesn't respect the rule of law or the Constitution or individual liberty. He is reeking of contempt. And, you know, he showed his contempt for Congress when he continued to spend money on gain-of-function research. But Congress won't do anything about it. And all they will do is they won't even challenge him on the numbers. You know, when? What are the numbers? And Maxine Waters comes out and says, you need to respect the chair. You need to shut your mouth. Let's play a little bit of Steve Scalise, because he had his moment in the spotlight doing nothing as well. Here's Steve Scalise.
The headline like that of this morning.
Well, that's actually Claiborne.
Caused some real setbacks. I see my time has expired. I now yield to the ranking member for 5 minutes of questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
This is Scalise.
Dr. Fauci, Dr. Walensky, we're going to be passing out some pictures. These are pictures that were taken just last week during the trip that I took along with 10 of my colleagues to the southern border over in McAllen, Texas. Some from the border in McAllen at a temporary processing center, some at the Donna Detention Facility, where you can see in some of these cells they're holding people. I'll let you take a look at those, but while you're reviewing those pictures, I'd like to read the CDC guidance that y'all have issued on Mexico. And first it says level 4, which is the highest level, very high level of COVID-19 in Mexico. This is CDC. 1, travelers should avoid all travel to Mexico. That's CDC guidelines. Because of the current situation in Mexico, even fully vaccinated travelers may be at risk for getting and spreading COVID-19 variants and should avoid all travel to Mexico. This is CDC. You go on to say some other things. Then we talk about traveling back into the United States. This is only if you're an American citizen. All air passengers coming to the United States, including U.S. citizens and fully vaccinated people, are required to have COVID-19 test results no more than 3 days before travel or documentation of recovery from COVID-19 in the past 3 months.
So you get the idea. He's going to hammer them on the hypocrisy. That we're going to lock down Americans, we're going to have vaccine passports for us, but have the borders wide open, and we don't care what happens with that. Fine. But let's talk about us being locked down. Instead of continuing to focus on the border, right? Again, why don't you allow me to cross the border into a public accommodation without masks, without soon to be a vaccine passport? They're keeping you divided by focusing on this phony border issue. And I say it's phony. It's a real crisis. It's a humanitarian crisis. It's a societal crisis. We've talked about this for many years. And, of course, Trump didn't do anything about it except to use it to get elected. Nothing. Did nothing about it. Because if he had done anything about it, it wouldn't have we wouldn't have this kind of a situation right now, would we? They never did take away the incentives for illegal immigration. But if you want to do it legally, oh, now that's a problem. If I want to go to Mexico to get dental work done, oh, I can't do that. But anybody that wants to come in with human trafficking, they can do that by the massive amounts. We got to stop talking about the hypocrisy, and we need to start talking about what the solution is. Because as you can see, they're going to continue to use this to posture and to talk about hypocrisy, and they're not going to get in their face and shut this thing down. Why are Christians who just want to worship being called COVID conspiracy theorists? Ask RT. They talk about the case of Pastor James Coates in Canada, a controversial case of freedom of religion that is resonating around the world. Spent almost 5 weeks behind bars. For two of those weeks, he was in solitary confinement, only allowed to leave twice a day for 15 minutes. His crime? Failing to place capacity restrictions on the congregants in his church. See, this is what they should be. I know this is a Canadian situation. But where are these people who are hammering them over the border issue? Where were they a year for the last year when this was happening in various measures in our own country? They were playing along with it, just like Trump was playing along with it, just like Jim Jordan is still playing. I understand. I'm not downplaying the seriousness of this phony pandemic. Coates told the court, "I am not a political revolutionary. I'm simply here in obedience to Christ. It is this obedience that puts me at odds with the law." And the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedom said, "Pastor Coates is defending freedom of association, freedom of peaceful assembly, which are freedoms exercised by the entire population, not just by churchgoers. You got to stop waiting for these do-nothings in Congress to quit making their speeches. They're not going to quit. You need to take your life back. You need to live your life back everywhere. Church, restaurants, theaters, if they won't let you in, start to create your own society. Don't wait for them to give it back to you. Don't ask Fauci for permission. Don't pay any attention to these useless people like Jim Jordan and Scalise, and they're probably the best, sadly, in the GOP, and that's not anywhere close to good enough." Last week in a dawn raid, of course, we saw they put three fences around the building. The property which belongs to the church. What about all this stuff about private property and how that is sacrosanct, right? Our rights, our human rights, my body is not sacrosanct. You can make all the demands that you want to on that, but let's not talk about private property of businesses, right? Except that was all private property, that church was. They didn't care about that. As I point out on RT, the scale of the intervention was extraordinary. 200 shock troops, think about that, 200 troops wearing gas masks to put up fences around a church that's empty, and with riot shields, 40 massive black vehicles and a helicopter, and it remains heavily fortified with police and security. Do you know who they're at war with? They're at war with you. They don't care about Al-Qaeda. They're at war with you. And your conservatives are not doing anything to help you either. This is a conservative state government here where this is happening. Grace Life's Congregation Health Services this last weekend, by the way. Did you see that? They even put it up on YouTube. They didn't show where they were meeting. They didn't show the building they were meeting in. But they said, here's our worship service. You know, the church is not a building, and they're not going to stop us by taking our building. The government of Canada, just like the government of the U.S., indulges in petty, vindictive, and out-of-proportion bullying. Couldn't have said it better myself. People of all faiths understand this. And a huge number of atheists understand this as well. And they're flocking to support Grace Life Church. RT quotes Alexander Hamilton, who said, "When a government betrays the people by amassing too much power and becomes tyrannical, the people have no choice but to exercise their original right of self-defense to fight the government, because Jim Jordan isn't going to fight for you. He's going to kowtow to the narrative. He's going to kowtow to Fauci. He's going to kowtow to Pelosi. He's going to wear his mask, and if it starts to slip down under his nose, he'll pull it back up in obedience." Makes me sick to watch him talk. Any of these people talking about freedom with a mask over their face? Are you kidding me? What's the problem with you? What's the problem with you if you trust these people, if you trust Trump? And these people are still trusting Trump. They still don't understand how this thing happened. Like deer in the headlights. In June 2020 in Toronto, thousands of people demonstrated side by side in the middle of a global health pandemic. But that was Black Lives Matter, founded by Patrice Cullors, the trained Marxist, as she called herself, who's now got several houses worth about $4 million. Despite the draconian laws of politically correct speech and the dire consequences of triggering someone by something that somebody says, why come, note to think of it, are there no consequences when Antifa and BLM march and chant, F your Jesus, right? No, that's not a problem either. So the virus isn't a problem. Hateful speech is not a problem. Beating police officers is not a problem. Leftist media, like Vice, have put a spin on the story. It's adjacent to the truth. They described Grace Life as, quote, one of the places of worship at the center of a holy war waged by a group of pastors against the protocols put in place to reduce the pandemic's death count. Really? Really? Talk about the pandemic's death count. When nothing at all happened since they've been meeting since last July. As they pointed out, they've had one person die. You know where that person died? Somebody who was in their 80s who couldn't get cancer treatment. They didn't die of COVID. They died of medical malpractice and political tyranny. That's what they died of, not COVID. Same thing is true of a lot of these churches. Vice goes on to say, Coates and his followers aren't merely on a holy mission. The pastor greatly downplayed the severity of the pandemic and echoed a popular conspiracy theory that the pandemic is a play for the elites to strip people of their freedoms. They've been meeting and nothing has happened, just like the much, much bigger church in L.A. and many others. People meeting by the thousands, by several thousands, every week, no masks, singing, no social distancing, indoors, nothing happened. It's a lie. And you expose a lie by living your life. You don't expose a lie by having somebody like Jim Jordan put a mask on his face and try to score debating points with Fauci. Let me give you an example of where this is headed. This is Finland. And I'll try to read a little bit of the subtitles here, but I'll tell you what is happening with this. This is a small group. They were meeting. They used to meet. They don't have a building. You don't need to have a building to meet as a church, right? As a matter of fact, we have beautiful, wonderful buildings all over Europe. Magnificent architecture and structures that are totally empty. There's no church there. Same thing happened in the Soviet Union. You know, they made sure the people would not meet there. But we did that willingly here in the West. That's why we're going through what we're going through. They used tyranny to shut down the churches there, turned them into museums and things like that. Oh, yeah, come in and look at it. Beautiful architecture, but don't you dare try to worship here. Well, here in the West, we just decided we didn't care anymore. And so the church buildings are empty. But this small group in Finland, they have 40 people. And they'd meet in homes. But they would typically get together on a Sunday because the restaurant was closed on a Sunday. They would rent the restaurant, and they would meet there until all this pandemic lockdown began. And then after that happened, they got permission from the restaurant owner to meet outside in front of his restaurant because that was still part of his property. So they met outside, had 35 of the 40 people that typically show up. And they've been doing this for a few Sundays, but evidently the dictators in Finland don't like that. So they showed up to harass them. Here's some of the video of what happened with that.
Joo, kiitos vaan Jumalalle siitä, että meillä on tänään vähän
praise God that we have
lisää kuulijakuntaa täällä paikan päällä kuulemassa hyviä sanomia Jeesuksesta, Kristuksesta.
And then the police show up. Pastor, we have a 2-meter distance between people. And yet they're not standing 2 meters apart. Maybe the older man there could sit a little bit further away because they've got everybody in family groups. I didn't mention that. The family groups are together, but they're 2 meters apart, 6 feet apart. And he says, what about this group here? And he goes, well, that's my family. I have 5 children and a wife. police officer says, in public spaces, you need to be even further away than you are in homes. And at this point, the pastor laughs at the absurdity of that. That's seriously what he had to say.
Okay.
And then he gets up and he goes, all right, we're going to have to go with the police now because we will not go more than, we will not go 5 meters apart because that's what they started demanding outside. And so they arrested these two pastors. They held them for several hours. It was this last Sunday. And as he pointed out, when the police officer is talking to him, and that clip that you saw there, he says, well, I have five people in my family. That's my family. So the people were together in family groups. Each family group had 6 feet between them, and they're outdoors. This is simply about harassment. This is not about any concern for disease. This is totally insane. Give you an idea. The police said, well, that may be true, that you can remain close together inside your home, but you have to observe that two-meter rule. But he goes, if you get outside of the home, then you're going to have to get further apart. At which point the pastor laughed at that, right? Because that makes absolutely no sense. The police officer even said, well, I think the family groups are going to have to be 5 meters apart, 15 feet apart. They're just making this stuff up. This is pure Soviet Union. This is pure dictatorship. Dictatorship at the lowest level because these people have the power to do whatever they want. So they eventually put them in handcuffs, took them out, held them for 4 hours. They had four police vans filled with police to go break up that dangerous church meeting outside with people in family groups 6 feet apart. 6 feet apart. So he said, yeah, you can come together close inside your home, but when you're outside, every member, even toddlers, have to be two meters apart from other people. But, you know, when you're a family and you're indoors, that's fine. But the family, when the family goes outside, the family, each member has to stay 6 feet apart. See how stupid that is? The joke. Absolutely a joke. So they said, they put out a statement, said, our meeting, April 11th, this last Sunday, was not illegal. They said, we will be meeting again, and you're all welcome. They're not going to stop. Good for them. They said the restrictions on assembly imposed by the regional government agency do not apply to worship services organized by religious communities or to other similar public religious practice on the community's own or equivalent premises. And they are actually registered. Not that we should have to register churches, but in Finland, they complied with every possible regulation. They registered their church. They met outside. They had social distancing outside. Nothing. It's about stopping people getting together. That is the essence. It's about denying our humanity. That's the point. He went on to say, he said, a Bible-believing Christian is a law-abiding Christian. The Finnish Constitution stipulates that no attempt may be made to interrupt or even disrupt a religious service. As a matter of fact, it says in the criminal code, they state here in this LifeSite News article, they said in the criminal code, anyone who disturbs a religious service, a church service, or other such religious exercise or funeral service by noise, by threatening behavior, or otherwise shall be sentenced to a fine or imprisonment for a term not exceeding 6 months for violating religious peace. The police officers are the ones who are rebelling. They're rebelling against the law. They're rebelling against the Constitution. In all of these cases, in our country, in Finland, in Canada, the government is in rebellion to the law, to the Constitution that gives them their authority, the Constitution they swore to uphold, and they're in rebellion to God most of all. They're focusing on the churches because the churches are not going to be intimidated if they're a real church. And this is why this is the center of what we're seeing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to, is Ammon coming on at 10 o'clock? Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to establish contact with Ammon Bundy. Before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you something about what is happening in Kentucky. In Kentucky, this was sent to me Thank you to, and I don't have the cover letter here of who sent this to me, but the Democrat governor there, Beshear, who was one of the first people to do lockdowns and masks, said that he's not going to lift the COVID-19 restrictions until 2.5 million people are vaccinated in Kentucky. Well, that means if he's going to have 2.5 million people vaccinated, that means that he's only going to only allow 50,000 people to opt out or not get vaccinated. He's expecting to vaccinate every single person in Kentucky for all practical purposes before they lift the lockdown. Only 50,000 people. 2.5 million people are going to have to get vaccinated before I let you go. And we need to just say, let my people go. We didn't agree to the slavery. I never agreed to it. I never abided by it. I'm not going to abide by it. We've got to demand that these tyrants get their knees off of our necks. They have no legal authority. They are the ones, as a matter of fact, conspiring to deprive us of our liberties, not just in Finland, but in the United States. If you conspire to deprive people of their civil liberties, that is a federal offense. It's against the law in states as well. These people operating under color of law need to be shut down. They continue to get us distracted by things like the shooting that happened in Chicago. You know, when we look at that 13-year-old kid, someone also sent me a very well put-together video. I'm not going to show it because it's all visual. I'll just describe what it was. It had clips showing surveillance cameras, a piece of surveillance cameras from all different directions. Here these kids are up to mischief. They're shooting guns. The police are called. They're dispatched. You watch the struggle, the chase, the kid running down there, and you can see that he throws he's got the gun in his hand, and you can see him throw the gun down and then throw his hand up. Perfectly understandable that the police officer would shoot him, quite frankly. But I don't know if they're going to use this to riot in Chicago. I don't think the kid is, well, he, you know, certainly didn't look like he was black. I don't think he was Hispanic. I don't know what kind of racial skin color things are going to try to bring into this. The kid was a criminal, and it's tragic that he got shot. But what is going on with a 13-year-old kid running around shooting a gun in Chicago late at night? They will use this to distract people, and yet that story is everywhere. That story is everywhere. But the fact that the Kentucky governor would say, you're not going to have your freedom down until you take a vaccine, until I shoot you with a vaccine. Why isn't that the story? That is far worse than what happened with this 13-year-old punk getting shot by a cop. This governor tyrannically demanding that he is going to inject an untested genetic modification medicine. We see massive problems with everybody everywhere. He's going to do that, or you're going to be locked up in solitary confinement. You're not going to go anywhere. You're not going to be anywhere in public space. I mean, that is the most outrageous thing. And you've got the police, in many cases, lining up behind this. 200 people going to lock down a church and to put up 3 layers of fence around it. Why isn't that the big outrage? You notice how that's not really being talked about at all by the mainstream media? And what the Kentucky governor is saying is not being talked about either. People flock to the state capitol to protest what they're calling a lockdown. This is only being picked up by the local news in Kentucky. The protest began when people gathered outside the governor's mansion at around 10 o'clock Wednesday morning, intending to send the governor, Beshear, a message. Lift these restrictions now and do not wait for more people to be vaccinated. One protester remarked, this is 4 more months of lockdown. This is ransomware. This is COVID ransomware. And we know who the Trojan horse was that put this all in. Donald Trump. The Trojan horse to get us locked down until a vaccine was out there. Again, the idea that if this vaccine works, because we got to get everybody vaccinated. Why? Well, because it's going to give everybody immunity. Well, then, if you got immunity, you don't need to worry about me. You don't need to worry about me with your mask either. This is the 394th day of 15 days of flattening the curve. It's enough. said, Marty Terry. I wonder if that person's a listener. I've been counting this thing down. I count my time. I'm on day 398, so this is 2 days ago. So we're 2 days off. I count this. Maybe they're counting it down from, I don't know when they did it in Kentucky. I count it from when Trump did the executive order. He thinks he can give us our freedoms. Our freedoms are inalienable. They are our freedoms. He swore an oath to defend Kentucky and the U.S. Constitution. He's totally in violation of it. Good job, Marty Terry. He knows exactly what's going on. Meanwhile, the governor comes back. He tweets out. He says, well, this is just basic math. This is just science and math. We're going to keep you locked down until you all get vaccinated. No exceptions. Well, let me tell you, this is common core math, like the math that was given to us, the educational system that was given to us by Bill Gates. Funny how he calls that common core, how Davos calls the vaccine passport a common pass and their commons project. They want to destroy the common man, don't they? All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk to Ammon Bundy, who's set up peoplesrights.org. And he has been refusing to wear the mask and taking it on and paying the price. So we're going to talk to Ammon Bundy when we come back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
All right, welcome back. And we have on the line Ammon Bundy, his organization, peoplesrights.org. He set up to help to defend people's rights, and not just for this tyranny that was imposed on us this last year, but there's a lot of situations where the government is out of its lane and taking on people's rights. And the best way to do this, I mean, there's a lot of different things that we can do. Right, we can appeal in the courts, and we can tie that up for a long time and hope that we get an honest court decision. That hasn't really been working too well lately, and he's experienced that as well. We know how rigged the court systems are. We know how passive the politicians are. So maybe we need to start standing together as we the people at the grassroots level. I absolutely agree with that approach. That's exactly the right approach. And so I want to catch up with Ammon Bundy as to what has been happening there. I talked a little bit about what they did to him after the protest. But this, Ammon, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Dave.
Oh, yeah. Tell people, we've talked about this before. I've had you on. Talk to people briefly about what the charges were about when all of you went to protest what Brad Little was trying to do, manipulating the legislature, keeping people locked down. Was it last summer, I think it was? And then some charges that came out of that, and then subsequently what happened just a couple of weeks ago when they arrested you again. So go back to what happened with the initial protest.
So originally, I mean, it wasn't really a protest. We were just going to actually to a legislative session. It was a special session that the governor called because he was trying to pass a bill that was an immunity bill, basically would make him legally unaccountable for any of his COVID actions. And he has imposed quite a bit here in Idaho. He, and you know, a lot of people don't realize, but in most states, I know certainly in Idaho, that the governor has an imposed martial law on the people here, and he is holding on to that law.
That's right. Martial law pretty much everywhere in the United States for a year now.
Yeah, and the Idaho law, you know, just to briefly cover it, says that the governor can put the state of the people in a martial law status for 30 days, and if it's an imminent situation, for another 30 days, which is still very limited to what he can do, but he can actually enact, you know, the military affairs here. And after 30 days, he's supposed to then turn it back over to the legislature, back to a Republican form of government as secured. But he has remained in the, you know, continued that martial law order. And I just want to read just real quickly. I won't be boring, but the authority he's using is under Idaho Code Title 46.6, which is Military and Military Affairs, Martial Law, and Active Duty, 46.601. It's authority of the governor. And this is what it reads. During a period of state of extreme emergency, the governor shall have complete authority over all agencies of state government, including all separate boards and commissions, and the right to exercise all policing powers vested in the state. And that's where we're at right now. And
that's
so
where we are everywhere in the country, Ammon, because, you know, we had President Trump. I marked time from that Friday the 13th when he did the executive order for a national state of emergency. What he did was he gave the authority to these governors to act under martial law. And it didn't matter if the state law said that you can only do it for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. As long as that federal state of emergency is there, that gives them the legal cover to continue with their martial law. But it also unleashes massive amounts of money. And that's the way that the federal government typically gets people to do what they want them to do. They pour money at them as a carrot. So it gave both of those things to everybody, and it's that federal presidential executive order that is the basis for all this. In different states, we're seeing this done differently simply because of what the governors feel that their people will put up with.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And in fact, March 13th, when President Trump announced that they were going to release $50 billion to the states that were in a state of emergency, that was the same day that Governor Little here in Idaho put the state in emergency.
Exactly.
And according to his own website, we had one COVID case, whatever that means, right?
Yeah.
There was only one case, and they put the state of emergency. And then on March 25th, President Trump announced that they were going to release $2 trillion for those who are in extreme state of emergency. And guess what happened on March 25th in Idaho?
That's
Governor
right.
Little declared the state an extreme state of emergency.
Yeah.
And I want to read you, I think you'll appreciate this, David. There's Idaho Executive Order number 2020-07. And this is from Governor Little. And he says, whereas I issued a proclamation on March 13th declaring a state of emergency, whereas I issued a proclamation on March 25th, 2020, declaring it state of extreme emergency in Idaho, pursuant to Chapter 6, Title 46, Idaho Code, that's the martial law code, whereas each of these proclamations remain in effect today, whereas Congress passed and President Trump has signed three legislative packages that provide state funding in response to COVID-19, whereas I anticipate additional congressional action on federal relief package to states regarding COVID-19, now therefore, listen to this is amazing, now therefore, I, Brad Little, governor of the state of Idaho, do hereby order the creation of a COVID-19 financial advisory committee comprised of members appointed by and serving at the pleasure of the governor for the coronavirus relief fund and other funds to be administered by the office of the governor.
It's all about the money. He doesn't even make any bones about
it.
Yeah, they gave me this money. No, that's the same thing that happened at the hospitals. You know, it's like you do a clinical diagnosis because we haven't got any tests and they don't work. You make a clinical diagnosis, here's $13,000. If you get the person sick enough, you put them on a ventilator, here's another $39,000. And then, oh, by the way, everything that you do to them, we'll give you a 20 to 25% bonus on top of that. So kick all the other people out. Have everybody that comes in, for whatever reason, declare them to be coronavirus patients, and we get our case numbers up. I mean, it was all about the money, and it was all coming the White House, coming from Washington, coming from Trump.
That's right. And he made it so that he receives that money directly, and it goes directly to the office of the governor.
Yeah.
And then he created this little board of his buddies that literally decide how to spend the money at the pleasure of the governor. And we're talking about upwards to $10 billion. Our state budget is $1.5 billion a year.
Wow.
We're talking about...
That's a lot of pleasure.
You know, we're talking about 7 or 8 times the regular state budget. And the governor doesn't get to decide how the normal budget is spent. That's the legislature's.
Yeah.
So this is just free game. So he made himself a dictator using martial law code. And then he's got funding now. And he can decide how he wants to spend it by himself at his pleasure.
Wow. That's amazing. This is just direct communism. This is like the kind of corruption that you see in Venezuela. And, you know, I've got all the money and my pals and I are going to spend it at our pleasure.
He even says, at the pleasure of the governor.
Yeah,
that's what the order
says.
Of the governor. It's amazing.
Yeah,
amazing. Unbelievable.
All right, so you guys show up and you know exactly what's happening. He tells the legislature you can't meet because they were going to try to tamp down this never-ending state of emergency that he had set up. And he tells the legislature they can't meet. And then he writes his piece of legislation. And then he calls them back in. And this is like colonial America, where the governor sends out the legislature and then calls them back in. So you guys go in to watch what's going to happen. And that was last summer. And then what happened?
Well, so we bring a large crowd. There's 300, you know, plus people there. And the first day they tried to block us in from going into the house on the house gallery. They'll actually block us. And we have very good law here in Idaho that says that those buildings are supposed to be open to the public and they can't restrict it. And Idaho State Police, probably under the direction of the governor, I really don't know that for sure, but they actually place guards and block the doors going into the gallery and will not let us in. So the people pushed their way in and got in, and they finally consented to let the people come in, and everybody sat in there peacefully, and then it goes to hearing. We had hearing and testimony, and then the hearing came the next day, and ultimately what happened is they simply did not want me there at the Capitol building. And there's tons of evidence. I wouldn't say this. I could give you all kinds of evidence of what they were doing and plotting. They didn't want me there. They felt like if I was removed from the Capitol building, that all of this pressure and all these hundreds of people would be gone. And so the next day, they came in at 5 o'clock into Lincoln Auditorium without going into a ton of detail. I could if you want me to, but basically they said that the normal closing hours of the Capitol building is 7 o'clock. They came in at 5 o'clock into Lincoln Auditorium, said that the room is closed at 5 o'clock, and they trespassed and arrested me. They took me to jail that night, and I spent the night in jail. Got out the during the night, went to bed that night, and I went back to the Capitol building to participate in the Senate side of it. And I went into the Senate room, sat down, and I was in there for about an hour. And the Senate went to ease, and Idaho State Police surrounded me again and arrested me and drugged me to jail. And that time I spent about 30 hours, almost 30 hours in jail. And they put me in what they call the cold box, which is pretty extreme conditions.
Wow.
So then I got out then, I got out there, and then now over the last several months, I've been litigating my, you know, case, not just several months, it's been like 8 months now. This happened in August, so eight months.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that I think, that keeps coming up. The prosecutors keep So I keep saying, hey, I have a right to a jury trial because they suspended jury trials here in Idaho. Completely suspended it. I'm like, that's a constitutional right that I have.
That's right.
I argue I have a right to speedy trial. And I've even, showed them and actually won in litigation that their calculation of speedy trial is incorrect in, Idaho. But but this is what the prosecutor, so in my argument of that I have a right to a speedy trial, the prosecutor actually, this is their concluding, they come back and said basically that the Supreme Court has suspended jury trial, so therefore there is no jury trials going on in Idaho. So therefore, and this is what he says, therefore the defendant cannot demand something to which he has no right.
Huh. And let me just interject here. I mean, we've got people who are doing Zoom meetings about everything, right? They've shut down the churches, so they tell people, well, you can do a Zoom church. Why can't they do a Zoom jury trial? They don't want to.
Well, they can, but that's not truly, I've been arguing that that's not truly a trial,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But they actually said, so they said the defendant cannot demand something to which he has no right. So they're saying I don't have a right to a speedy trial. Jury trial.
Because they're not doing it. They've decided they're not going to do it, so you don't have a right to it.
That's right. And in fact, this is what they said. They said the state requests the court deny defendant's petition to calculate his speedy trial based on irrelevant and inapplicable law. And what she's saying is that jury trials and the calculation of jury trial when you're supposed to have it in the state of Idaho is irrelevant and inapplicable because the Supreme Court has suspended jury trials altogether.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And when is all this going to end? Well, it's never going to end. They don't have any intention of this ending. They're making money hand over fist. The politicians are making money. The corporations are making money. They don't have to follow the law. They can act as petty dictators. They've always wanted this, and they've got it. They're not going to let it go. So
yeah,
then what happened?
So then what happened?
I know they arrested you you went to the courthouse. Tell us what that was about.
Yeah, so I pushed and pushed and pushed, and then there was a little window at the beginning of March where the Supreme Court said, well, we can have jury trials. And I'm pretty sure it was because I pushed so hard. There was a little window. What I mean by that is there was a week where they said that we can have jury trials. And then after that, they suspended them again. And so they set my date for a trial on March 15th, and we were summoned at 8:15 in the morning. We show up at the address at the courthouse and before 8:15, we show up. We try to get into the courthouse, and they block us because we won't wear a mask. They block us from coming in, and we begin to say, "Look, we're here. We have a right to be here. We're ready to go to trial. We're very confident that we will prevail in trial, and they will not let us in. They're blocking and guarding us, and they've got, the courthouse is clear full of armed, officers."
Yeah.
And ultimately, we sat there and tried to get in for over 2 hours, and then the judge issued a warrant for failure to appear, and with a $10,000 bond. We're talking about a misdemeanor trespassing charge here, and with a $10,000 bond. And then they sent 10 to 12 officers and came out of the courthouse, arrested me, and drugged me into the courthouse without a mask and took me to jail.
Wow. Yeah, it's Kafka-esque. You show up, they won't let you in, and then they give you a ticket for failure to appear. And then even though they won't let you in, they get you for trespassing. It's straight out of Kafka. It's amazing.
Well, so I'm looking at the evidence here, right? And I've got a ticket to failure to appear, and it has a time on it, and it has an address on it. And it's the same address, so where I was arrested is the same address that the summons says I'm supposed to be at.
It is just like the trial of Kafka. Absolutely amazing. So what's happening now? What is the situation now?
So then what happened was is I continued to litigate this, and I actually was able to get the second trespassing charge dismissed because I proved that they did not have the proper authority to arrest me. And it was funny because basically what I did is I caught them in a lie. I completely caught them in a lie. They knew I caught them in a lie. So the prosecutors quickly dismissed that case because they didn't want the lie to be exposed. Okay. So they, and then, and now, and I'll, you know, prove to you that this was the case, because when we had a hearing, the prosecutors had the day before filed a dismissal on the second case, and the judge asked, well, why are you dismissing the case this late in the prosecution when we're getting ready to go to trial? And the prosecutors responded this way. They said, Judge, we don't have to give a reason. We have a right to dismiss, and we don't want to give a reason. And they actually never on record acknowledged why they dismissed my case. Now, I made a pretty good record on it later, but they did not want it known that they didn't have authority in the first place. I'm talking about statutory authority to even arrest me in the first place.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, but when that case was dismissed, what happened is it basically all the authority that they had, it came into question to even arrest me even on the first one. So I wanted to go talk to my legislatures. We are in a legislative session right now, and I went to the Capitol bill to speak to my legislatures, and they arrested me again and charged me for another charge of trespass.
Wow.
And I asked them, by what authority are you doing this on? And they wouldn't give it to me until right before they booked me. And they said, we're doing it on authority of basically the director of administration, which is the authority that we proved they did not have in the second case, which they dismissed. So I got out of jail, had the book out. Didn't take me as long as it took the first few times. Just so you know, the reason why I spent so many hours, I've spent over 65 hours in jail over this, is because they wouldn't book me without a mask. And so I never did wear a mask. What I had to do is wait and, you know, till they about froze me to death in those cold rooms.
Wow.
And finally get, you know, the uppers to say, well, just book him anyway without a mask.
And so, see, this is why, this is what got me so torqued out watching Jim Jordan supposedly posturing, you know, he's going to talk to Fauci and everything. The whole time he's talking to him through a mask. And as the mask starts to slip down under his nose, he pulls it back up again obediently. It's like, what's the matter with you? Of course, you know, he's going to buy into all the pandemic nonsense that Fauci's put out there. But, you know, he's just grandstanding. And that's all that's going on with these other people. They won't stand for their freedom. And so they're not going to stand for yours either.
No, they have lost the complete understanding of freedom.
Yeah,
they believe that they have the right to rule, and it doesn't matter with anything else. And even the prosecutors have acknowledged multiple times in this case that the defendant or the people cannot demand something to which they have no right. And that's what they keep saying over and over in this case.
They keep saying you have no rights.
I think they're going to...
You have no rights. They have. They can just say whatever they want to. Yeah.
Yeah. That I don't have no right because the Supreme Court says I don't, or because they say I don't, or because the judge in the case says I don't. I mean, right.
Which brings us.
Anyhow, ultimately, what happened? Yep.
Right. Which brings us to peoplesrights.org. That is the real issue. They will not give us our rights. They will not acknowledge that we have rights from God, that they swore an oath to the Constitution to protect. And so we have to stand together to get those rights. Tell us a little bit about peoplesrights.org and what's going on with that right now.
So peoplesrights.org is a network. So, you know, it's very, very specifically a network. And it's what it is. It's a network of people, and it starts right in your community. So we have created some tools that are available through peoplesrights.org, where a local area, a local community can start communicating quickly, meeting. They're very efficient tools such as mass texting, mass email, mass secure messaging, ham radio communication, and then also quite a few other tools as far as education, what you should do in an area, your local area. And these tools are available. They're available for free. They're not, we're not creating a hierarchy where one person's at the top pulling the strings and you got these levels. It is simply the local people using these tools to unite with each other, communicate with each other, and organize to defend with each other.
That's
and
right.
Then what they can do is then the network, the beauty of the network is that the areas next to them, adjacent to them, they can call upon them to help if they need.
Yes.
And then those areas can call upon all the areas beside them. And it can be spread all over. And we're actually going into Canada right now. We're working this to where we're going to be in British Columbia and Alberta fairly soon, because there's the groups up there are wanting. We're talking to groups in Australia and in three different groups in Europe. And so we've got right now, there's I'll log in really quick here and tell you, because there's almost 54,000 people in People's Rights, and I think we're in like 413 areas in the United States, and we're continuing to grow. And the idea is that it's going to be neighbors. Who are you going to call?
That's right.
Are you going to call 911 when your rights are being infringed upon? Is that who you're going to call?
Yes.
Are you going to call
probably somebody from 911 that's taking your rights right now?
Yeah, they're going to be dispatching, someone who's probably going to take your rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that in every case, but the statistically, that now is what the statistic probability is,
yeah,
when you call 911.
Yeah, it's important to have good local sheriff, but that's really rare. I talked to one in Arizona, but Sheriff Hathaway in Arizona, he's somebody who respects the Constitution and the rule of law, but that's the rare exception to find that. And so people need to start collecting together. If you do that, that's going to help you to get some lesser magistrates in at the local level. It's another way to organize politically. But you got to have something that goes beyond the judicial system, that goes beyond, that's very corrupt, something that goes beyond the elections, which are completely corrupt. You've got to have some way to stand with each other, and we see this type of pattern was there at the beginning of this country. Things like the committees of correspondence, the Minutemen, so forth and so on. And we're not talking about people showing up, with a militia. We're talking about people standing together in civil disobedience as a group, and to lobby with political pressure, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, ultimately, we have a responsibility as a people here to defend ourselves.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
That might look like a legal defense. It might look like a political defense. And it might look like a physical defense.
Mm-hmm.
So we have an obligation, and we always have. And what we've done is we've outsourced our defense to those who, in the past, have actually done a fairly good job. And that's why our fathers and forefathers received so much prosperity. But what's happened is those systems of defense that we set up and we outsourced, if you will, have now become those who are the primary takers of rights. And they don't believe that we have rights. They believe that our rights are granted by them. And so what we have to do, just as the Declaration of Independence says, Whenever the means in which it was created is not being met anymore, we can either alter or abolish. And but no matter what we do, we have to defend our rights.
That's right.
Otherwise, they'll be gone. They will not last. If people can, I know you don't, David, but if people think that they could stand around and do nothing, and their liberties will be preserved, they're absolutely ignorant.
That's right.
Never has that ever happened in history.
That's right. Yeah, and that's why I got so upset watching these Republican congressmen with their moment in the limelight. We have outsourced, as you pointed out, we've outsourced the protection of our God-given liberties to people like that. And they have assured us that they're going to do something. They have pacified us. We've become lazy in all this. The image that comes to mind, of course, is the Eloy from the Time Machine, H.G. Wells' Time Machine, where you got these pink little creatures living on the surface that are just playing with their music and their art and so forth, and you got the Morlocks that are coming out at night and taking them down one by one for food. That is where we are right now. We've been pacified and entertained into, you know, becoming these little Jigglypuffs that are just food for these people. And we've got to start taking, we've got to start organizing and taking this back and building, rebuilding our communities together at the local level. That is the point of conflict, because that's what they're trying to destroy the hardest, to keep us apart from each other, to make sure that we don't assemble, to address our grievances, to make sure that we don't go to churches, to make sure that we don't get out in the public square and go to a business. They don't want us coming together in any way, shape, or form.
That's right. That is, I mean, and it, the answer is for, you know, for Americans to come home.
Yeah.
Come home. Come to back to your home. Build your families. Take care of your families. Build your local community. Take care of your neighbors. Come home, America. Yeah. Washington, D.C. is lost and will never be returned. I promise. It will never restore. Washington, D.C. is lost.
That's right.
It will have to be completely rebuilt, or it will never be rebuilt at all, because those people have completely lost the purpose in which they exist, and the states are not far from that.
That's right. That's right.
You know, and so the answer is the local people organizing and communicating and creating a system of defense with each other, and then why not reach out to other neighbors, other communities, to, if needed, to assist. And that's basically the design of people's rights. And it was done right. We built it right. It's very secure. And we have it so when people sign up, your name doesn't just go to everybody else. What it does is it goes to 3 to 5 area assistants, what we call them. And they've been selected by the people there in their local area, to basically be the gatekeepers of the information. And it could be as simple as somebody needing help, like, for example, they're going to court and they feel like they're going to get railroaded. Well, they could reach out to these area assistants. The area assistants will send the message out to everybody else. And next thing you know, you got 30, 40, or 50 people there in the courtroom supporting that person to make sure that the judge doesn't steamroll them and walk them to the gallows without justice.
Yeah.
I mean, or it might be actually a physical defense, or maybe they have a potluck. I mean, there's been some beautiful, beautiful things that have happened in people's rights and will happen as long as neighbors continue to get together.
That's right. And sometimes all that it takes to dispel the tyranny is just to have the deterrence of a large number of people. Sometimes that's all that needs to happen. We just need to have our own self-respect and a desire to be free. As I said earlier, when I was playing these clips back and forth between Fauci and Jim Jordan, I said, you know, they constantly come at you to get you to give up your liberty for safety. I said, liberty is never safe, but the thing that's the most dangerous is tyranny. It's far more dangerous than liberty ever will be. And that's what we cannot allow. If we allow this to happen, if we passively sleepwalk into this, is why I talked yesterday. Em and I talked to the pastor. You probably saw the viral video in Canada where he threw him out of the church on Easter Sunday. I talked to Artur Pawlowski, and he knows what this looks like because he grew up in Poland. And you had these churches from Romania that were being kicked around by Lori Lightfoot in Chicago. They knew what it was like. People who have lived under communism, they can smell this as it's coming. But Americans are sleepwalking through this. They don't understand what is happening. Even after a year, it's hard to get people to wake up and see what's going on. So I really do appreciate you putting that together. Again, I would recommend people take a look at peoplesrights.org. Peoplesrights.org. Important work that has been done there to help you to organize. It's one way to do it. There's a lot of different ways that we can do this. We need to explore all of these different avenues, but it's a great start what you put together there, Ammon. Keep us informed as to what's happening there, and certainly we'll be watching and hoping that this comes out well. Thank you for fighting for this. Really do appreciate
that. Absolutely. Thank you, David.
Thank you so much.
It. Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then I want to come back and talk about the vaccines, talk about what the Pfizer CEO is going to do, and I want to talk a little bit about how they came after Anomaly. Yeah, they were very upset. NPR came after this guy who is a rap artist, and he's got into political commentary. He and I have exactly the same perspective on what's happened this last year. And they were very upset about the fact that he got traction. We're going to show you the censorship that NPR was pointing out, how they spun this, how they got him demonetized, and many other things. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family. Just to give you an idea of how bad things have gotten, understand that we don't have Congress making laws anymore. And now we're even getting to the point where it doesn't matter what the bureaucrats are saying. Now we have government directly by corporations. That's what's going on when you've got the CEO of Pfizer saying, you're going to need to have a third dose next year. You're going to have to get this every year. Let's just cut the middleman out of the way, right? Let's just cut Fauci and Trump and Biden out of the way. We'll just take our orders directly from the CEO of Pfizer, like we take our orders for our free speech directly from the CEOs of Facebook and Twitter and so forth, Google. They can tell us what we can and cannot say. And the CEO of Pfizer will tell us what medical care we must have and make those demands on us. You know, I understood where this was happening from the very beginning because for years I've talked about this game that Fauci and the CDC that sells billions of dollars worth of vaccines, the CDC does. They've always played this vaccine game with flu shots. And their goal was to get everybody everywhere to take the flu vaccine every year, very much like the IA 2030 agenda by Bill Gates, where he says every person, every age, everywhere, and it's implied that you're going to take every vaccine. And so we knew this was their plan. Every year they were sidling up to this. Every year they played the same numbers game, the same numbers game that they're doing with this. Every year, to boost their flu numbers, which this last year went to zero, by the way, because this is the flu here. But every year, they would tell the healthcare providers, they'd say, well, you know, we got a new strain of flu. And it was total nonsense because they would produce the flu shots before they knew what strains are going to be out there. And they would just hope that they had the right strain of flu that they were vaccinating you for, right? What are the chances of that, given how many different strains of flu there are out there, that they would pick the right one in advance? it's ludicrous. Everything about it. Insane. But they would pick, you know, months or year in advance which strain of flu they're going to vaccinate you for. And then they would tell everybody that you got to get the flu shot. And then they would tell the healthcare providers, we don't have the time to run tests on these things. So if you do a swab, don't do a swab and send it in to us. They even said that with the H1N1, quote-unquote, pandemic. Don't send us the swabs. We don't have enough tests to do this stuff. We don't have the time or the personnel to do it. If it looks like the flu, call it the flu. And then based on that, they cook up their numbers, right? And then based on their numbers, we got a surge here. Look at how bad the flu is this year. And then, of course, if you died and they diagnosed you with the flu, they would count it as a flu death. It's the same game they've been playing for years that they've done with this. And then they move this out to, you know, you've seen the signs everywhere. I mean, basically, you get a flu shot at the gas station while you're getting your car filled up. Or you're filling up your car. It's absurd. The idea that you would go around all these different drugstores and to get a shot. There's no way I would ever do that, even if I believed in these vaccines. But that's exactly what they're doing. And so now, this has been a CDC obsession for years. They've been increasing this and putting their footprint out and increasing the media pressure and the campaigns. And then they went, in 2009, they went to the next level with MMR. Again, you got to get it to protect yourself. And Trump, all of us grew up in a situation where everybody got the measles and it was unbelievably rare for anybody to have any issue with measles. And yet everybody's now got to be vaccinated against measles and mumps and so forth. And everybody's got to get it because your vaccine doesn't protect you. All that nonsense, making it mandatory to go to school. They started that in 2019, in May of 2019, after Trump got back from Davos. That was when he said they got to get the shots. He's not going to stand for your individual liberty. No. They say you got to get the shots. You got to get the shots. And then lo and behold, less than a year later, he's pushing this nonsense out to us. So every year it was increasing with a flu shot. They go to the MMR, and now they're telling us a third booster shot within 12 months, maybe every 6 months. Who knows? It just depends, I guess, on how much money they would like to make. Isn't it interesting? You know, we look at all this stuff, and Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer, these big corporations telling you what you got to have. Don't you think that Johnson Floor Wax would tell you that you got to wax your floors every year? Go back a few decades. So you need to go out and buy that Johnson Wax because, you know, you're going to have to do it every year, maybe every 6 months. I don't know. You're going to have to buy my product. If you don't buy my Johnson's floor wax, you're not going to be allowed out of your house. How about that? See the power these corporations have? It's absolutely absurd. Maybe, Johnson & Johnson baby powder. Maybe you got to use that on your baby every day because it just smells so great. Breathe deeply of that Johnson's baby powder. Every year, you need to get your flu vaccine, said the CEO of Pfizer, Bourla. It's going to be the same with COVID. In a year, you'll have to go and get your annual shot from COVID to be protected. Why is this not a stench to these congressmen or anybody at any government level or to the press? Why are people not puking about this CEO telling us how we're going to have to buy his product whenever he says so? That's exactly what we're talking about here. Remember, Scott Gottlieb, the chair of the head of the FDA, director, I guess is his title, under Trump, left the FDA a year before this started and went to the board of Pfizer. And Scott Gottlieb is out there saying, yeah, you're going to have to do it too, right? How is it that these people can demand that we buy their product, that they can have their product paid for by President Trump, tens of millions of dollars, they have no liability for whatever they do, and then they can dictate to us how many times we've got to buy their product? See, this is worse than Obamacare, isn't it? Everybody freaked out when you're going to have to buy insurance that they dictated and the terms that they dictated it. And yet now, this is not just a money issue. It's money for them. But this is also putting something in your body, taking it to the next level. This is Obamacare on steroids. We should call it Trump Care because Trump is the one who ushered it in. Nothing has essentially changed under Biden. He's just going with what Trump started. And so he says, yeah, it's going to be the headlines. CNBC, Pfizer CEO says it will be needed. Breitbart, it's likely that it'll be necessary. And on and on. Nobody questions it. As a matter of fact, Breitbart quotes Mehdi Hassan. I played that clip for you the other day because I couldn't believe what a bootlicker he was. Groveling before Fauci. Oh, you're just the one most wonderful person in the world, and you've saved us and all this. Please tell us, what do we need to do next? And so Breitbart has a tweet up from Mehdi Hassan saying, with Fauci again, while it's likely that it'll be effective for considerably longer, we may very well need to get booster shots. And no comments or pushback from Pfizer against Fauci or Mehdi Hassan. They're just going to push it out there. You're not going to see any pushback from Fox either. Former FDA Chief Scott Gottlieb says it's going to be a struggle to reach herd immunity because of all these vaccine refusers. He says the real obstacle is not going to be how much of this stuff we can make. Oh, they can make lots of it. Yeah, the real obstacle is compliance. Let me tell you, what's driving all this is nothing but corporate greed. Corporate greed and corruption. Gottlieb said the U.S. is reaching a point where supply will outstrip demand. One in four Americans, he said, would refuse a coronavirus vaccine if offered, according to an NPR Marist poll. Another 5% are undecided about whether or not they would get the shot. He's worried that this reluctance will be enough to prevent the nation from reaching what's known as herd immunity. And again, I'll say it real quickly. Herd immunity. You can't have herd immunity if you don't have individual immunity. You can't have individual immunity if you don't have lasting immunity. These people are saying we don't have lasting immunity. You're going to have to get it again in 6 months. This is ridiculous. Lasting immunity is the only way that you get herd immunity. The person who came up with that term talked about it long before they had any of these vaccine issues. If you don't have lasting individual immunity, you can't have herd immunity. All they're doing is just shooting people with dangerous experimental genetic code injections so that they can make money. NPR is talking to him, to Gottlieb. They said, well, more than 123 million people, about 37% of the population, have taken the vaccine. But Scott Gottlieb, FDA commissioner from 2017 to 2019, then he goes and cashes in on his golden parachute, sitting on the board of Pfizer, says, I think there's probably 150 million Americans who are eager to get vaccinated. And as we expand into the younger age cohorts and a new eligible population, you're not going to see the demand be as brisk because they don't need it. You've been telling them for the last year, even your cooked numbers show that they're not getting it. That's another indication it's not a pandemic. A pandemic affects everybody in every age demographic. Your 1918 flu that you love to talk about, that was evenly distributed across different demographics. This is nothing other than a relabeling of the actuarial table. I think he said, as we get to 150 million vaccines, I think we struggle to get to 160, which is roughly half the U.S. population. So he says, I don't know how we ever get to herd immunity. So just keep shooting those same 50% of the population, the idiots out there. And then NPR freaks out because they said the most popular Johnson & Johnson vaccine story on Facebook came from a conspiracy theorist, says the coincidence theorists. And so this is, listen to the way they start this thing. And they said CNN, ABC, The New York Times, Fox News. They were four of the five most popular Facebook posts of articles, and yet they were ranked two through five. So what was the number one posting? Well, it wasn't from a news organization or a government official or a public health expert. Oh, no. You mean somebody that's not a public health expert or somebody spokesman for the government or an official mainstream news organization had something to say that people agreed with? And I looked through this story, and they didn't say what he had to say. They attack him and slander him for being a liar. NPR contacted, this is anomaly they're talking about, that I'll read you in the next paragraph. The most popular link on Facebook about the Johnson & Johnson news was shared by a conspiracy theorist. That's how you shut somebody down. Oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. They're the coincidence theorists. And self-described, quote, news analyst and hip-hop artist named Anomaly, who thinks the pandemic is a cover for government control. No, he knows it. He knows it. So do I. So do you. And all through this article, they don't say what he had to say. They contacted Facebook, said the company says they've taken action against previous posts of his that have broken their rules. Experts say that this sort of tactic is gray area misinformation. And it can have the same impact on an audience as a blatant falsehood. So in other words, they're saying it's not a lie, it's not untrue, it's gray area. Why is it gray area? Because it didn't come from the government or mainstream media? You know, you have white propaganda, right? White propaganda is when you tell somebody the truth, but you don't tell them all of the truth. What you're telling them is true, but it's designed, you're withholding certain information to try to push them in a direction. That's the mainstream media at its best. Then you have black propaganda. Black propaganda is blatant lies. That's typically where they hang out. But they say, they don't call him a propagandist. They don't say that he's lying to anybody. They just say, well, he's in a gray area. Here's what Anomaly had to say, because you have to hear what he has to say that they took issue to, because they don't ever talk about what he had to say. That's how intent NPR and the establishment media is on keeping you in the dark. They won't even talk about what he had to say. They'll talk about him. They won't talk about the information, because they can't let you hear the information. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? Here's an Anomaly.
For accurately fact-checking Jen Psaki on her public lie about FDA approval. Today, this truth comes out. Why are they allowed to delete the clear truth and cover up for liars? So they're saying that that's misleading. Me calling out Jen Psaki, which is the post they removed and why they restricted and demonetized my page. So let's look again. This is from a White House video. It says they've all been approved by the FDA. That's what Jen Psaki said. The FDA fact sheet, literally on the FDA.gov website, it actually says there is no U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved vaccine to prevent COVID-19. And it says the Pfizer and BioNTech, and same with the other two, COVID-19 vaccine has not undergone the same type of review as an FDA-approved or cleared product. So my headline wasn't misleading. I just said the truth that Facebook's restricting my page because I fact-checked Jen Psaki for lying. I told the truth. That's why Facebook's mad. That's why NPR's mad. And these embarrassing losers even admitted it in their article. The problem with my reporting is that it's factual. That's the problem.
The issue is this is a factual report, said Sarah Roberts, an information studies at professor at UCLA.
Give me a break. And to just further destroy their propaganda, I'm going to read the article some more, because I guess NPR reached out to Facebook for more info, and it says, in the case of the post by Anomaly, a representative for Facebook said the company has taken action against previous posts of his that have broken the social media platform's rules and broadly removed more than 16 million pieces of content over the past year related to COVID-19 misinformation. But because this specific post did not contain any factually incorrect information, it would stay up. These people from NPR are trying to pressure Facebook to get me taken down or to get my post taken down, my CNN post, and they're admitting that it's factually correct. But here's what Facebook and NPR is not admitting. The post that they previously took down and restricted was also not factually incorrect. Actually, I fact-checked the right wing too, and I said that they were sharing a fake Bill Gates video, so I fact-checked both sides and I was factually correct. So Facebook, they're either lying or just making it blurry and confusing people by saying it was against our community guidelines. Doesn't mean it's factually incorrect. It wasn't, and Facebook can't prove it either because they're lying or they're censoring me for telling the truth, which is a joke. And if you want to be quite honest, I've had a few posts flagged over the last year, including CDC data when Ron DeSantis literally quoted the CDC and posted a CDC article, an NBC local news article that I posted they flagged, a screenshot of New York Times and Fox News. This is what they've been censoring me for. CDC, FDA, all mainstream news sources. I post mainstream because I know how these people operate, so I give them the facts in their own articles, and they still come at me like this. These people are out of control. It's disgusting. I'm sorry that my Johnson & Johnson CNN article got shared more than Fox News and CNN and all the other mainstream media. I'm so sorry people like me more. I'm sorry for being an entrepreneur and rising to the top with no manager, no label, no big backing behind me. Just independent hard work. I know you guys hate it. You have all the money, all the power, all the corporate control behind you, and you still can't compete with me in a fair market, and you still can't compete with me even if it's not a fair market. It's like they just want to get rid of me completely on this website, because no matter how much they lie and restrict, I'm still blowing past them.
You know, the truth can be very powerful, can't it? It can be more powerful than multi-million dollar organizations and collusion between the richest corporations that the world has ever seen. I sympathize with him. Been there, done that too. And that's where we live today. that they'll come after you if you tell the truth. They absolutely are apoplectic in having the vapors that somebody who was using their own information to expose the fact that, what? It's experimental, right? And as I said, they created this new problem talking about the blood clot issue because the narrative got out of control for them. When you had four different states at four dozen people immediately having problems, being carried off in ambulances, all of a sudden everybody's like, what's going on? And they says, look at this. They say that it's experimental. There's not any of these that are approved officially. And we know why, because they typically, according to their rules, would have to go out for 2 years, which they themselves have said in their World Health Organization forums is not sufficient to do 2 years worth of testing. They did 2 months worth of testing. They gave this clearance as an emergency experiment. And then when it blows up, and you got four dozen people immediately injured, they ignore that. That hasn't been talked about now for several days. All they're talking about is, oh, we got six people who had a blood clot issue. One of them died. But that's out of 7 million people. 7 million people. Okay, well, we'll see about this. The Fauci is reassuring everybody. And what he is saying is, and this is what this is all about. Well, this isn't a cancellation, he says. It's just a pause. If anybody's got a doubt, they may be taking that we're taking safety very seriously. I think this is an affirmation. Do you see what he's doing? I said this from the very first day. It didn't take him long to do that, to show you that that was what they were doing. I said, they're redirecting you away from people passing out immediately all over the country, taking you to another issue, saying, out of an abundance of caution, we're going to shut everything down so that everybody knows that this is all about safety. We take it very seriously. And then they have this stooge, Donald Trump, out there yapping his mouth about how this is awful. We got to keep this going. And then Fauci is over on Tisk, Tisk. You know, this guy, you know, we're about science. We're about safety. They use him just like they used him all last year. The big mouth Trump, the Abbott of Abbott and Costello, is still out there shooting his mouth off. It absolutely disgusts me. Even the people in the alternative media at InfoWars, another place that Breitbart doesn't even criticize vaccines. InfoWars will criticize the vaccines, but they'll never, never talk about their savior, Donald Abbott Trump Costello. Meet the media's new boogeyman, the vaccine hesitant, as the New American points out. And they talk about all the different articles at The Hill, at Axios. Everybody talking about hesitancy. And that's why they did the pause. Redirect you away from the real issue to something that is far more rare and pretend that they're taking all kinds of safety precautions simply because people like Anomaly and others are saying, hey, you know, this is all experimental. Don't want people to know that. A Navy lieutenant contacts LifeSite News and says military members are being illegally coerced into taking COVID vaccines. He wants to stay anonymous. Why? Because we've politicized everything. We politicized healthcare. We are coercing people. He said these commands that are restricting leave to those people who are vaccinated, he said that's coercion. That's illegal. He said he talked to some of the sailors underneath him, and he said they didn't want the vaccine, but they took it anyway because of the severe restrictions that were going to be imposed upon them if they didn't. See, it's ransomware. It's ransomware. We're going to lock your life down until you take the vaccine. Oh, that's right. You took the vaccine. Well, we're not going to let you go anyway. Same thing they do when they lock your computer down, right? One sailor, he said, outright told the lieutenant if they let me take leave, and if they loosen restrictions, hell yeah, I'll take it. Another sailor told the lieutenant that they wanted to take the vaccine in order to travel overseas. He asked him point blank, he said, do you want this vaccine? Sailor said, no. Then the lieutenant asked, are you being incentivized to take it? The sailor said, yes. Another sailor, I told him, you don't have to do this. This is absolutely voluntary. His words to me were, well, I don't want it, but I want to get off the ship. See, we've been kidnapped. People want to get out of their isolation. They want to be able to go to public accommodations or travel or what, just like these sailors. They said acceptable ROM sequester facilities for non-immunized sailors are ship berthing, living barge, barracks, or your personal residence. And you can have limited contact with other residents. So in other words, you're going to be under house arrest. Under house arrest. CDC is now coming out and saying, well, you know, we're going to keep this on out of an abundance of caution, just so that you understand that we're putting your safety first. We're going to continue to pause this Johnson & Johnson vaccine for a few more days, maybe a few weeks, just, you know, as a virtue signal about how cautious we are, of course. But we don't have any proof that it causes blood clots. Well, you know, they haven't tested that, have they? They didn't test anything about these vaccines. That's the whole point. These coincidence theorists. Well, here's some other data out here. Of course, it's just anecdotal, I guess they'll say. But a 21-year-old University of Cincinnati student dead 24 hours after the Johnson & Johnson COVID injection. This is what they don't want you to see. They're going to talk about something else. They're not going to talk about the four dozen people. They'll talk about something else. They'll say six women. Out of 7 million, but reports are coming in now that show the problem is much more widespread than they're admitting. The death of a young 21-year-old pre-med student who died within 24 hours. He was a National Honor Society pre-med student, made the dean's list every semester, volunteered for several organizations in his free time. He voluntarily received the experimental Johnson & Johnson viral vector shot Saturday morning, April the 10th, this last Saturday. 2 days before the pause. He felt ill that evening, according to accounts on Facebook. He went to sleep, hoping he'd feel better after a good night's rest, but he never woke up. The post, according to his mother, he said he apparently died peacefully in his sleep. We suspect a bad COVID vaccination reaction. You had another friend. This is my daughter's friend. Please pray for his family. They're really struggling. He had the Johnson & Johnson vaccine Saturday, started not to feel good on Sunday evening. He was gone the next day. So heartbreaking. So they're focusing on a very rare condition where blood clots happen in combination with low blood platelets. But they ask on vaccineimpact.com, what if the blood clots happen without low blood platelets? Will those deaths and injuries then be explained away as a coincidence by the people I call the coincidence theorists? You have a healthy 43-year-old father of 7, suffers a stroke and is paralyzed after the Johnson & Johnson COVID shot. This is in Mississippi. His family is devastated. He's a father of 7. They're just praying that he can learn how to talk again. They're grateful that the FDA has halted the use of the experimental COVID injection. Again, reported by local news, not by the national news. It started out as a normal day for 43-year-old Brad Malagary of St. Martin. The busy father of 7 spent the morning at his office before heading to get a Johnson & Johnson vaccine a little afternoon. He returned to work, and within 3 hours, co-workers noticed that he was unresponsive at his desk. They called me, said his aunt, and said that he had that vaccine and that something was wrong. We think it's a stroke. She rushed to the hospital, diagnosed him with a stroke. A blood clot had lodged in his left middle cerebral artery. His boss said the family believes without a doubt that the vaccine caused the stroke. He's a young, healthy 43-year-old, and I immediately thought I'd be sure to tell the doctors he took the J&J vaccine, and that, to me, is what caused his stroke. He can't talk now. He can't walk. He's paralyzed on his right side. He knows who we are, and he will just cry when he sees us. This is why I do this. Try to warn people. I knew this a year ago. I refuse to cover this up for Trump. I refuse to that this preening, narcissistic, lying, grifting son of a bitch is killing people. He's got blood on his hands. He has turned this country into martial law dictatorship with Fauci ruling us. And of course, it's only going to get worse under people like Biden. We got 5,800 people, fully vaccinated people, have now become infected with COVID-19. 74 of them have died. And let me tell you, this is not simply about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. When we look at the over 10,000 people that have been reported in the U.S. and Europe that have died, more than we see happening immediately after a vaccine in the last 11 years combined, they say, well, yeah, we had six people who had some problems. Only one of them died out of 7 million. So we're pausing this out of a concern for safety. What a lying piece. This is why Fauci is so dangerous. But let me tell you something. Trump is a part of this as well. I guarantee it. I guarantee that guy is a part of this. Shame on the people who stand with him. They've got blood on their hands as well. Well, that's it for the show today. Thank you for listening.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.